Aesop in Rhyme, Old Friends in a New Dress, Aesop. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Aesop in Rhyme, Old Friends in a New Dress. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: Aesop in Rhyme, Old Friends in a New Dress. Author: Aesop, Marmaduke Park. Release date: April 19, 2007. Ebook 21,189. Most recently updated: January 2, 2021. Language: English. Other information and formats: www.gutenberg.org/ebook/21189. Credits: produced by David Edwards, Jacqueline Jeremy, and the online distributed proofreading team at https://www.pgdp.net. This file was produced from images generously made available by the University of Florida, the Internet Archive/Children's Library, asterisk, start of the project GUTENBRG EBOOK Aesop, in Rhyme, Old Friends in a New Dress, asterisk. Contents: The Dog and the Wolf. 5. The Herdsman. 8. The BOYS and the FROGS. 11. The Cock and the Jewel. 13. The Man and the Lion. 15. The Fox and the Crane. 18. The TRAVLLER and the Satyr. 22. The TRAVLLERS and the Purse. 25. The Mouth and the LIMBS. 27. The Hare and the Tortoise. 31. The Milkmaid. 34. The Lark and Her Young ONES. 39. The Philosopher and the Acorn. 43. The Wolf and the Crane. 45. The Dog and the Shadow. 48. The TRAVLLERS and the Bear. 50. The FROGS and the Bull. 52. The Council of Mice. 54. The Wolf and the Lamb. 57. The BASDS in Partnership. 60. The Lion and the Mouse. 64. The Jealous Ass. 67. The Town and Country Mice. 71. The Fox and the Crow. 75. The Lion and the Echo. 79. The Paper Kite. 82. The RATS and the Cheese. 85. Orlia and the Spider. 88. The Redbreast and the Sparrow. 90. The Poet and the COBWBS. 92. The Epicure and the Physician. 96. The FROGS Desiring a King. 101. The Hare and the Bramble. 104. The Horse and the Stag. 106. The Cat and the Old Mouse. 108. The Fox and the Visor Mask. 110. The Goose that Laid the Golden EGGS. 112. The Fox and the Grapes. 114. The Mouse and the Weasel. 116. The Miser and His Treasure. 118. The Jackdaw and the PEACOCKS. 120. The Sparrow and the Hare. 122. The Ass and the Lion. 123. The Stag and the Fountain. 125. The Eagle, the Cat, and the Sow. 127. The Eagle, the Raven, and THE Tortoise. 129. The Flay and the Horse. 131. Esabat Play. 132. The Old Pilot and the SAILORS. 134. The Crab and Her Daughter. 135. The Sun and the Wind. 137. The Two POTS. 139. Hercules and the Carter. 141. The Ant and the Grasshopper. 142. The Crow and the Pitcher. 144. The Angler and the Little Fish. 145. The Frog and the Fox. 146. The Ape and H.R. Young ONES. 147. The Fir Tree and the Thorn. 149. The Ass in the Lion's Skin. 151. The Dog in THE Manger. 153. The Stag and the Vine. 154. The Fur Mischievous Dog. 155. The Sick Man and the Physician. 156. The Farmer and His Sons. 158. The Swallow and the BIRDS. 160. The Boasting TRAVLLER. 162. The Old Woman and Her MAIDS. 164. The Fur Industry and Sloth. 166. The Shepherd Turned Merchant. 168. The Spendthrift and the Swallow. 170. The Eagle and the Crow. 171. The Wolf and the Shepherd's Boy. 173. The Fox Without a Tail. 175. The Men and the Oyster. 177. The Shepherd and His Dog. 179. The Countryman and the Justice. 181. The Cock and the Fox. 183. The Blind Man and the Lame. 185. The Man and the Serpent. 187. The Two Asteriums. 189, the sot and his wife, 191, the farmer and his quarrelsome sons, 193, the fig tree and the flowering shrub, 195, the farmer and the landlord, 197, the schoolboy and the monitor, 199, the miller and his ass, 201, the dreamer and his sons, 204, the old man and death, 206, the painter, 209, the cobbler and the nabob, 212, the horse and his rider, 215, the good minister, 219, the swan and the cook, 221, the lynx and the mole, 223, the old cat and the young mouse, 225, the two friends, 227, the sick stag, 230, the forest and the woodman, 232, the elephant and the monkey of Jupiter, 234, the woodcutter and death, 237, the rat and the oyster, 239, the physicians, 242, the mountain in labor, 244, the cat metamorphosed into a woman, 246, the frog and the rat, 248, the lion and the fly, 251, the two mules, 253, the Jupiter and the farmer, 255, the cock, the cat, and the little mouse, 258, the monkey, 261, the horse and the ass, 263, the astrologer who fell into a well, 265, the animals sick with the plague, 269, the candle, 273, the hog, the goat, and the sheep, 275, the delicate heron, 278, the blackamoor and her mistress, 280, the bear and the gardener, 282, the vultures and the pigeons, 284, the bear and the bees, 287, illustration 2, Aesop in rhyme, Aesop in rhyme or old friends in a new dress, illustration 5, by Marmaduke Park, Philadelphia, C. G. Henderson and Co. N. W. Corner Arch and 5th Streets, 1852, entered according to Act of Congress in the year 1852, by C. G. Henderson and Co., in the Clerk's Office of the District Court of the United States, in and for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. Illustration 7, The Dog and the Wolf. A wolf there was, whose scanty fare had made his person lean and spare. A dog there was, so amply fed, his sides were plump and sleek. T. said, the wolf once met this prosperous cur, and thus began, your servant, sir, I'm pleased to see you look so well, though how it is I cannot tell. I have not broke my fast today, nor have I, am concerned to say, one bone in store or expectation, and that I call a great vexation. Indeed it is, the dog replied, I know no ill so great beside, but if you do not like to be so poorly fed, come live with me. Agreed, rejoined the wolf, I'll go, but pray, what work am I to do? Oh, guard the house, and do not fail to bark at thieves and wag your tail. So off they jogged, and soon arrived at where the friendly mastiff lived. Well, said the wolf, I can't deny you have a better house than I. Not so, the other then replied, if you with me will hence abide. Oh, said the wolf, how kind you are, but what do you call that? Hanging there, is it an iron chain or what? Friend, said the dog, I quite forgot to mention that. Sometimes, you see, they hook that little chain to me. But it is only meant to keep us dogs from walking in our sleep, and should you wear it, you would find it's nothing that you need to mind. I'll take your word, the wolf replied. Its truth by me shall ne'er be tried. I'll have my liberty again, and you your collar and your chain. Moral, our neighbors sometimes seem to be a vast deal better off than we, yet seldom 'tis they really are, since they have troubles too to bear, which, if the truth were really known, are quite as grievous as our own. Illustration 10. The herdsman, a herdsman, who lived at a time and a place, which, should you not know, is but little disgrace, discovered one morning on counting his stock that a sheep had been stolen that night from the flock. Oh, I wish I had caught ye, whoever ye be. I'd have soon let ye see. What he had to expect, said the herdsman, I trow, but I've thought of a scheme that will trouble you now. So what did he do, sir, but put up a board, describing the thief, and proposed a reward of a lamb to the man who would give information concerning the thief and his true designation. The project succeeded, for soon there applied a certain near neighbor with others beside. But tell me the thief, said the herdsman, at least. Come hither, said they, and we'll show you the beast. The beast, said the rustic, who thought he should die on the spot when he found that the thief was a lion. Ill luck to my hurry, what now shall I do? I promised a lamb to detect you, 'tis true, but now I'd consent all my substance to pay, if I could but with safety get out of your way. Moral, silly people ask things that would ruin if sent, they demand them in haste and at leisure repent. Illustration 12, Illustration 13, the BOYS and the FROGS. Some boys beside a pond or lake were playing once at duck and drake when, doubtless to their heart's content, volleys of stones were quickly sent. but there were some there will be such, who did not seem amused so much, these were the frogs, to whom the game. In point of sport was not the same, for scarce a stone arrived, tease said, but gave some frog a broken head and scores in less than half an hour, perished beneath the dreadful shower, at last, said one, you silly folks, I say, do fling your stones another way, though, sport, to you, to throw them thus, remember, pray, tease death to us. Moral, from hence this moral may be learned, let play be play to all concerned. Illustration 14, Illustration 15, The Cock and the Jewel, a cock. There was, a sage was he, if Aesop we may trust, who wished to make a meal, you see. As other sages must, with this intent, as heretofore, when on the hunt for grain our hero scratched the litter o'er with all his might and main, but scarce a minute had he scratched, when to his great surprise, a gem with golden chain attached, he saw with both his eyes. Alack, quoth he, what have we here, a diamond, I protest, which lords and ladies buy so dear, and hold in such request, but one good barleycorn to me, has more intrinsic worth than all the pearls now in the sea, or gold now in the earth. Moral, the moral here in Aesop's mind, was this, there's not a doubt, things have most value which we find, we cannot do without. Illustration 17, the man and the lion, a man, and a lion once had a dispute, which was reckoned the greatest, the man or the brute, the lion discoursed on his side at some length, and greatly enlarged on his courage and strength. The man, one would think, had enough to reply, on his side the question, which none could deny, but like many others who make a pretense, he talked perfect nonsense and thought it good sense. So, says he, don't be prating, look yonder, I pray, at that sculpture of marble, now what will you say, the lion is vanquished, but as for the man, he is striding upon him, deny it who can. But pray, said the lion, who sculptured that stone? One of us, said the man, I must candidly own. But when, we are sculptors, the other replied. You will then on the man see the lion astride. Moral, the man might have added if he had been wise, but a beast cannot sculpture a stone if he tries. That sufficiently shows where the difference lies. Illustration 19, Illustration 20, the fox and the crane. I certainly think, said a fox to a crane, that face, ma'am, of yours is remarkably plain, that beak that you wear is so frightful a feature, it makes you appear a most singular creature. The crane, much offended at what she had heard, marched off at full speed without saying a word. Oh dear, said the fox, Mrs. Crane, I protest, you misunderstand me, 'twas only a jest. Come, don't be affronted, stay with me and dine, you know very well tease this temper of mine, to say such odd things to my intimate friends, but you know that poor Reynard no mischief intends. So the crane thought it best not to break with him quite, but to view his remarks in a good-natured light. So she put on as pleasant a face as she could. When he asked her to dine and replied that she would, but alas, she perceived that his jokes were not over, when Reynard removed from the victuals its cover. 'Twas neither game, butcher's meat, chicken, not fish, but plain gravy soup in a broad, shallow dish. Now this the fox lapped with his tongue very quick, while the crane could scarce dip in the point of her beak. You make a poor dinner, said he to his guest. Oh dear, by no means, said the bird, I protest. But the crane asked the fox on a subsequent day, when nothing, it seems, for their dinner had they, but some minced meat served up in a narrow-necked jar, too long and narrow for Reynard by far. You make a poor dinner, I fear, said the bird. Why, I think, said the fox, 'twould be very absurd to deny what you say, yet I cannot complain, but confess, though a fox, that I'm matched by a crane. Moral, cunning folks who play tricks which good manners condemn, often find their own tricks played again upon them. Illustration 23. Illustration 24. The traveller and the satyr. A luckless, white in winter slow, traveling once a forest through, cold and hungry, tired and wet, began in words like these to fret. Oh, what a sharp inclement day, and what a dismal, dreary way, no friendly cot, no cheering fields, no food this howling forest yields, I've not in store or expectation, there's not before me but starvation. Not quite so bad, a voice replied, quickly the traveler turned aside, and saw the satyr of the wood, who close beside his dwelling stood. Here is my cave hard by, said he, walk in, you're welcome, pray be free. The traveler did not hesitate, hoping for something good to eat, but followed to his heart's content, blowing his finger as he went. Pray, said the satyr, may I know for what you blow your finger so? What need you, said the man, be told, to warm my fingers, numbed with cold? Indeed, was all his host replied, intent some pottage to provide, which heated well, with spice infused, was to his shivering guest produced, so hot it was, as Aesop sung, it made our traveler scald his tongue, and wishing not again to do it, our hero could not wait, but blew it. What, said his host in accent rough, is not your pottage hot enough? Yes, said the man, full well I know it, 'tis far too hot, that's why I blow it. You artful villain, do you so? His host replied with angry brow, my cave shall not a moment hold. A man that blows both hot and cold. By none but rogues can that be done, you double-dealing wretch, begone. Moral, the traveler scarce deserved such wrath, for warming fingers, cooling broth, no statutes old or new forbid it, although with the same mouth he did it, yet this beware of old and young, what Aesop meant, a double tongue, which flatters now with civil clack, and slanders soon behind one's back. Illustration 27, the travellers and the purse, 2. Friends once were walking in sociable chat, when a purse one espied on the ground. Oh, see, said he, thank my fortune for that, what a large sum of money I've found. Nay, do not say I, said his friend, for you know, tease but friendship to share it with me. I share it with you, said the other. How so, he who found it the owner should be. Be it so, said his friend, but what sound do I hear? Stop, thief. One is calling to you, he comes with a constable close in the rear. Said the other, oh, what shall we do? Nay, do not say we, said his friend, for you know, you claim the sole right to the prize, and since all the money was taken by you, with you the dishonesty lies. Moral, when people are selfish, dishonest, and mean, their nature in dealing will quickly be seen. Illustration 29. The mouth and the limbs. In days of yore, they say, 'twas then, when all things spoke their mind, the arms and legs of certain men, to treason felt inclined. These arms and legs together met, as snugly as they could, with knees and elbows, hands and feet, in discontented mood, said they, 'tis neither right nor fair, nor is there any need, to labor with such toil and care, the greedy mouth to feed. This we're resolved no more to do, though we so long have done it. Ah, said the knees and elbows too, and we are bent upon it. I, said the tongue, may surely speak, since I his inmate am, and for his vices while you seek, his virtues I'll proclaim. You say the mouth embezzles all, the fruit of your exertion, but I on this assembly call to prove the base assertion. The food which you with labor gain, he too with labor choose, nor does he long the food retain, but gives it for your use. But he his office has resigned, to whom you may prefer, he begs you therefore now to find some other treasurer. Well, be it so, they all replied. His wish shall be obeyed, we think the hands may now be tried, as treasurers in his stead. The hands with joy to this agreed. And all to them was paid, but they the treasure kept indeed, and no disbursements made. Once more the clamorous members met, a lean and hungry throng when all allowed from head to feet, that what they'd done was wrong, to take his office once again, the mouth they all implored, who soon accepted it, and then, health was again restored, moral. This tale for state affairs is meant, which we need not discuss, at present we will be content, to find a moral thus, the mouth has claims of large amount. From arms, legs, feet, and hands, but let them not, on that account, pay more than it demands. Illustration 32, illustration 33, the hare and the tortoise, said a hare to a tortoise, good sir, what a while you have been only crossing the way, why I really believe that to go half a mile, you must travel two nights and a day. I am very contented, the creature replied, though I walk but a tortoise's pace. But if you think proper the point to decide, we will run half a mile in a race. Very good, said the hare, said the tortoise, proceed, and the fox shall decide who has won. Then the hare started off with incredible speed, but the tortoise walked leisurely on. Come tortoise, friend tortoise, walk on, said the hare. Well, I shall stay here for my dinner, why? 'Twill take you a month at that rate to get there. Then how can you hope to be winner? But the tortoise could hear not a word that she said, for he was far distant behind, so the hare felt secured while at leisure she fed. And took a sound nap when she dined. So at last this slow walker came up with the hare, and there fast asleep did he spy her, and he cunningly crept with such caution and care, that she woke not, although he passed by her. Well now, thought the hare when she opened her eyes, for the race and I soon shall have done it. But who can describe her chagrin and surprise, when she found that the tortoise had won it, moral, thus plain plodding people, we often shall find, will leave hasty confident people behind. Illustration 33, the milkmaid, a milkmaid, who poised a full pail on her head, thus mused on her prospects in life, it is said. Let's see, I should think that this milk will procure 100 good eggs or 80 to be sure. Well then, stop a bit. It must not be forgotten. Some of these may be broken and some may be rotten. But if 20 for accidents should be detached, it will leave me just 60 sound eggs to hatched. Well, 60 sound eggs, no, sound chickens, I mean of these some may die, we'll suppose 17. 17. Not so many, say 10 at the most, which will leave 50 chickens to boil or to roast. But then there's their barley, how much will they need, why they take but one grain at a time when they feed, so that's a mere trifle. Now then let us see, at a fair market price, how much money there'll be? 6 shillings a pair, 5, 4, 3, and 6. To prevent all mistakes, that low price I will fix now, what will that make? 50 chickens, I said. 50 times 3 and 6 pence, I'll ask Brother Ned. Oh, but stop, 3 and 6 pence a pair. I must sell 'em. Well, a pair is a couple, now then let us tell 'em a couple and 50 will go, my poor brain. Why, just a score times, and 5 pair will remain. 25 pair of fowls, now how shameful it is that I can't reckon up as much money as this. Well, there's no use in trying, so let's give a guess. I will say £20, and it can't be no less. £20 I am certain will buy me a cow, 30 geese and 2 turkeys, 8 pigs and a sow. Now if these turn out well at the end of the year, I shall fill both my pockets with guineas, tease clear. Then I'll bid that old tumble-down hovel good. Bye, my mother shall scold, and my sisters they'll cry, but I won't care a crow's egg for all they can say. I shan't go to stop with such beggars as they. But forgetting her burden when this she had said, the maid superciliously tossed up her head, when alas, for her prospects, the milk pail descended, and so all her schemes for the future were ended. Moral. This moral, I think, may be safely attached. Reckon not on your chickens before they are hatched. Illustration 40. Illustration 41. The lark and her young ones. A lark, who had her nest concealed, says Aesop, in a barley field, began, as harvest time drew near, the reaping of the corn to fear, afraid they would her nest descry, before her tender brood could fly. She charged them therefore every day, before for food she flew away, to watch the farmer in her stead, and listen well to all he said. It chanced one day she scarce was gone, ere the farmer came and his son. The farmer well his field surveyed, and sundry observations made at last. I'll tell you what, said he, this corn is fit to cut, I see, but we our neighbor's help must borrow, so tell them we begin tomorrow. Just after this the lark returned, when from her brood this news she learned. Ah, dearest mother, then, said they, pray let us all be gone today. My dears, said she, you need not fret. I shall not be uneasy yet, for if he waits for neighbor's aid, the business long will be delayed. At dawn she left her nest once more, and charged her young ones as before. At 5 the farmer came again, and waited for his friends in vain. Well, said the man, I fancy, son, these friends, we can't depend upon tomorrow early, mind you go, and let our own relations know. Again the lark approached her nest, when round her all her young ones pressed, and told their mother, word for word, the fresh intelligence they heard. Ah, children, be at ease, said she. We're safe another day, I see, for these relations, you will find, just like his friends, will stay behind. At dawn again the lark withdrew, and did again her charge renew. Once more the farmer early came, and found the case was just the same. The day advanced, the sun was high, but not a single help drew nigh. Then said the farmer, hark ye, son, I see this job will not be done. While thus we wait for friends and neighbors, so you and I'll commence our labors. Tomorrow early we'll begin ourselves, and get our harvest in. Now, said the lark, when this she heard, our movement must not be deferred, for if the farmer and his son themselves begin, 'twill soon be done. The morrow proved the lark was right, for all was cut and housed by night. Moral. Hence, while we wait for others' aid, our business needs must be delayed, which might be done with half the labor 'twould take to go and call a neighbor. Illustration 44. Illustration 45. The philosopher and the acorn. A philosopher, proud of his wit and his reason, sat him under an oak in a hot summer season. On the oak grew an acorn or two. It is said on the ground grew a pumpkin as big as his head. Thought the sage, what's the reason this oak is so strong? A few acorns to bear that are scarce an inch long, while this poor feeble plant has a weight to sustain, which had much better hang on the tree, it is plain. But just at the time the philosopher spoke, an acorn dropped down on his head from the oak. Then, said he who just now thought his plan was so clever, I am glad that this was not a pumpkin, however. Moral, the sage would no doubt have looked grievously dull, had a pumpkin descended with force on his skull. Of his folly then let us in future beware, and believe that such matters are best as they are. Leave the manners and customs of oak trees alone. Of acorns and pumpkins, and look to our own. Illustration 47. The wolf and the crane. A wolf, once forgetting the size of his swallow, tried to pass a large marrow bone through it. Oh dear, said the beast, thinking death was to follow, how careless and stupid to do it. His mouth was propped open by means of the bone, and his breathing was greatly impeded, but a crane coming up he contrived to make known what kind of assistance he needed. How do you do, said the bird, said the beast, very ill. For a bone has gone down the wrong way, but if you can extract it by means of your bill, the service I'll amply repay. Thought the crane, I'm no surgeon, yet all must agree that my bill will make excellent forceps, and as for the money I do not now see why I need refuse taking his worship's. Said the bird, it's agreed, said his patient, proceed and take the bone hence, I beseech, which, after a while and with infinite toil, the crane at last managed to reach. Thank my stars. said the beast, from his terrors released. Thank you too, sir, said he to the bird. Alas, said the crane, is this all I'm to gain? I was waiting the promised reward. Said the wolf, you forget I've contracted no debt, since the service was rendered by me. Your head I released from the jaws of a beast, and now you're demanding a fee? Moral, give your help to a wolf should he beg for your aid, but you must not expect when you've done to be paid. Illustration 49, Illustration 50. The dog and the shadow. A dog, growing thinner for want of a dinner, once purloined him a joint from a tray. How happy I am with this shoulder of lamb, thought the cur as he trotted away. But the way that he took lay just over a brook, which he found it was needful to cross, so without more ado he plunged in to go through, not dreaming of danger or loss. But what should appear in this rivulet clear, as he thought upon coolest reflection, but a cur like himself, who with ill-gotten pelf had run off in that very direction, thought the dog, apropos, but that instant let go. As he snatched at this same water spaniel the piece he possessed, so with hunger distressed, he slowly walked home to his kennel, moral, hence when we are needy, don't let us be greedy. Excuse me this line of digression, lest in snatching at all, like the dog, we let fall the good that we have in possession. Illustration 52, the TRAVLLERS and the bear, 2. Travelers one morning set out from their home. It might be from Sparta, from Athens, or Rome, it matters not which, but agreed, it is said, should danger arise, to lend each other aid. But scarce was this done, when forth rushing amain, sprung a bear from a wood towards these travelers twain. Then one of our heroes, with courage immense, climbed into a tree, and there found his defense. The other fell flat to the earth with dread. When the bear came and smelt him and thought he was dead, so not liking the carcase, away trotted he, when straight our brave hero descended the tree. Then, said he, I can't think what the bear could propose, when so close to your ear he presented his nose. Why this, said the other, he told me to do, to beware for the future of cowards like you. Moral, those people who run from their friends in distress will be left when themselves are in trouble, I guess. Illustration 54. The frogs and the bull. A bull, once treading near a bog, displaced the entrails of a frog, who near his foot did trust them, in fact, so great was the contusion, and made of his inwards such confusion, no art could readjust them. It chanced that some who saw his fate did to a friend the deed relate, with croakings, groans, and hisses. The beast, said they, in size excelled all other beasts, their neighbors swelled, and asked, as large as this is? Oh, larger far than that, said they. Do not attempt it, madam, pray. But still the frog distended, and said, I'll burst, but I'll exceed. She tried, and burst herself indeed, and so the matter ended. Moral, should you with pride inflate and swell, as did the frog, then who can tell, your sides may crack, as has been shown, and we with laughing crack our own. Illustration 55, Illustration 56, the council of mice, some mice who saw fit once a quarter to meet. To arrange the concerns of their city, thought it needful to choose, as is common with us, first a chairman, and then a committee. When the chairman was seated, the object he stated, for which at that meeting they sat, which was, it should seem, the concerting a scheme to defeat the designs of the cat doctor. Nibblecheese rose and said, I would propose, to this cat we fasten a bell, he who likes what I've said now will hold up his head, he who does not may hold up his tail. So out of respect they their noses erect, except one who the order reversed eyes. All then but one, but yet not could be done, until he had his reasons rehearsed. I shall not, said this mouse, waste the time of the house, in long arguments, since, as I view it, the scheme would succeed without doubt if indeed we could find any mouse who would do it. Hear, hear, was the cry, and no bells we will try, unless you will fasten them on. So quite broken-hearted the members departed, for the bill was rejected nem. Con, moral, then be not too hasty in giving advice, lest your schemes should remind of the council of mice, you had better delay your opinion a year. Then put forth a ridiculous one, it is clear. Illustration 58, Illustration 59, the wolf and the lamb. A wolf and lamb once chanced to meet, beside a stream whose water's sweet, brought various kinds of beasts together, when dry and sultry was the weather. Now though the wolf came there to drink of eating, he began to think, as soon as near the lamb he came, and straight resolved to kill the same, yet thought it better to begin with threatening words and angry mien. And so, said he to him below, how dare you stir the water so, making the cool refreshing flood as brown as beer and thick as mud? Sir, said the lamb, that cannot be, the water flows from you to me, so 'tis impossible, I think, that what I do can spoil your drink. I say it does, you saucy puss, how dare you contradict me thus? But more than this, you idle clack, you railed at me behind my back, 2 years ago I have been told. How so? I'm not a 12-month old. The lamb replied, so I suspect your honor is not quite correct. If not your mother, it must be, and that comes all the same to me, rejoined the wolf, who waited not, but killed and ate him on the spot. Moral: some, like the wolf, adopt the plan to make a quarrel if they can, but none with you can hold dispute if you're determined to be mute. For sure this proverb must be true, that every quarrel must have two. Illustration 61, Illustration 62. The BASDS in partnership. This firm once existed, I'd have you to know. Messrs. Lion, Wolf, Tiger, Fox, Leopard, and Co. These in business were joined, and of course 'twas implied. They their stocks should unite and the profits divide. Now the fable relates, it so happened one day that their efforts combined made a bullock their prey, but agreed that the lion should make the division, and patiently waited the monarch's decision. My friends, said the lion, I've parted, you see. The whole into six, which is right, you'll agree one part I may claim as my share in the trade. Oh, take it and welcome, they all of them said. I claim to the second, since no one denies. 'Twas my courage and conduct that gained you the prize, and for the third, that you know is a fine, to the lord of the manor and therefore is mine. Hey day, said the fox. Stop a bit, said the lion. I have not quite done, said he, fixing his eye on the other three parts. You are fully aware that, as tribute, one other part comes to my share. And I think 'twould be prudent the next to put by, somewhere safe in my den for a future supply, and the other, you know, will but barely suffice to pay those expenses which always arise. If this be the case, said the fox, I discern that the business to us is a losing concern. If so, to withdraw, I should think would be best. Oh, yes. Let us break up the firm, said the rest, and so, for you may not have heard of it yet. It was quickly dissolved, though not in the Gazette. Moral: some folks in their dealings, like him in the fable, will take others' shares if they think they are able, but let them not wonder who act in this way, if they find none will join them in business or play. Illustration 65, Illustration 66, The Lion and the Mouse. A lion, with the heat oppressed, one day composed himself to rest, but whilst he dozed as he intended, a mouse's royal back ascended, nor thought of harm as Aesop tells, mistaking him for something else, and travelled over him and round him, and might have left him as he found him, had he not, tremble when you hear, tried to explore the monarch's ear, who straightway woke with wrath immense, and shook his head to cast him thence. You rascal, what are you about? Said he, when he had turned him out. I'll teach you soon, the lion said, to make a mouse hole in my head. So saying, he prepared his foot to crush the trembling tiny brute, but he, the mouse, with tearful eye, implored the lion's clemency, who thought it best at least to give his little prisoner a reprieve. 'Twas nearly 12 months after this, the lion chanced his way to miss when pressing forward, heedless yet, he got entangled in a net. With dreadful rage he stamped and tore, and straight commenced a lordly roar when the poor mouse who heard the noise attended, for she knew his voice. Then what the lion's utmost strength could not effect, she did at length with patient labor she applied, her teeth the network to divide, and so at last forth issued he, a lion, by a mouse set free. Moral: few are so small or weak, I guess, but may assist us in distress, nor shall we ever, if we're wise, the meanest or the least despise. Illustration 68, Illustration 69, The Jealous Ass. There, lived, says friend Aesop, some ages ago, an ass who had feelings acute. You must know, this ass to be jealous felt strongly inclined, and for reasons which follow, felt hurt in his mind. It seems that his master, as I understand, had a favorite dog which he fed from his hand. Nay, the dog was permitted to jump on his knee, an honor that vexed our poor donkey to see. Now, thought he, what's the reason I cannot see any, that I have no favors while he has so many, if all this is got by just wagging his tail? Why, I have got one which I'll wag without fail. So the donkey resolved to try what he could do, and determined unusual attentions to show, when his master was dining, came into the room. Good sir, said his friends, why your donkey is come. Indeed, said their host, great astonishment showing, when he saw the ass come while his tail was a-going, but who can describe his dismay or fear when the donkey reared up and brayed loud in his ear? You rascal, get down, John, Edward, or Dick, where are you? Make haste and come here with a stick. The man roared, the guests laughed, the dog barked, the bell rung, coals, poker, and tongs at the donkey were flung, till the blows and the kicks, with combined demonstration, convinced him that this was a bad speculation. So, mortified deeply, his footsteps retrod he, hurt much in his mind, but still more in his body. Moral: so some silly children, as stupid as may be, will cry for indulgences fit for a baby, had they entered the room while the donkey withdrew. They'd have seen their own folly and punishment too. Let them think of this fable, and what came to pass, nor forget he who played this fine game was an ass. Illustration 72, Illustration 73, The Town and Country Mice. a plain, but honest country mouse, residing in a miller's house once on a time, invited down an old acquaintance of the town, and soon he brought his dainties out, the best he had, there's not a doubt. A dish of oatmeal and green peas. With half a candle and some cheese, some beans, and if I'm not mistaken, a charming piece of Yorkshire bacon. And then to show he was expert in such affairs, a fine dessert was next produced, all which he pressed with rustic freedom on his guest. But he, the city epicure, this homely fare could not endure. Indeed, he scarcely broke his fast by what he took, but said at last, "Old crony, now I'll tell you what, I don't admire this lonely spot, this dreadful, dismal, dirty hole, seems more adapted for a mole than tease for you. Oh, could you see my residence, how charmed you'd be. Instead of bringing up your brood in wind and wet and solitude, come bring them all at once to town, we'll make a courtier of a clown. I think that, for your children's sake, 'tis proper my advice to take." "Well," said his host, "I can but try, and so poor quiet whole goodbye." Then off they jogged for many a mile, talking of splendid things the while. At last in town they all arrived, found where the city mouse had lived, entered at midnight through a crack, and rested from their tedious track. "Now," said the city mouse, "I'll show what kind of fare I've brought you to." On which he led the rustic mice into a larder snug and nice, where everything a mouse could relish, did every shelf and nook embellish. "Now is not this to be preferred to your green peas?" "Upon my word, it is," the country mouse replied. "All this must needs the point decide." Scarce had they spoke these words, when lo, a tribe of servants hastened through, and also two gigantic cats, who spied our country mouse and brats. Then by a timely exit she just saved herself and family. "Oh, ask me not," said she in haste, "your tempting dainties more to taste. I much prefer my homely peas to splendid dangers such as these. Moral, then let not those begin to grumble, whose lot is safe though poor and humble, nor envy him who better fares, but for each good has 20 cares. Illustration 76. Illustration 77. The fox and the crow. Crows feed upon worms, yet an author affirms. Cheshire cheese they will get if they're able. For, said he, I well know one unprincipled crow once purloined a large piece from my table. Then away darted she to the shade of a tree to deposit the booty within her, but it never occurred to the mind of the bird that a fox was to have it for dinner. How many a slip 'twixt the cup and the lip. Excuse me, I pray, the digression, said a fox to himself. I can share in the pelf if I act with my usual discretion. So said he, is it you? Pray, ma'am, how do you do? I have long wished to pay you a visit, for a 12-month has passed since I heard of you last, which is not very neighborly, is it? But dear madam, said he, you are dining, I see, on that subject I'd ask your advice. Pray, ma'am, now can you tell where provisions they sell that are not an extravagant price? Bread and meat are so dear, and have been for a year, that poor people can scarcely endure it, and then cheese is so high, that such beggars as I, till it falls, cannot hope to procure it. But the ill-behaved bird did not utter a word, still intent on retaining her plunder, thought the fox. It should seem this is not a good scheme. What else can I think of, I wonder? So said Reynard once more, I ne'er knew it before, but your feathers are whiter than snow is. But thought he, when he'd said it, she'll ne'er give it credit, for what bird is so black as a crow is? But I'm told that your voice is a horrible noise, which they say of all sounds is the oddest. But then this is absurd, for it never is heard, since you are so excessively modest. If that's all, thought the crow, I will soon let you know that all doubt on that score may be ended. Then most laughingly piped the poor silly biped, when quickly her dinner descended. Moral, if this biped had not been so vain and conceited, she would not by the fox quite so soon have been cheated. But perhaps the term biped to some may be new. 'Tis a two-legged creature, perchance it is. You, illustration 81, the lion and the echo. A lion, bravest of the wood, whose title undisputed stood, as o'er the wide domains he prowled, and in pursuit of booty growled, an echo from a distant cave regrowled articulately grave. His majesty, surprised, began to think at first it was a man, but on reflection sage he found it was too like a lion's sound. Whose voice is that which growls at mine? His highness asked. Says echo, mine. Thine, says the lion, who art thou? Echo as stern cried, who art thou? No, I'm a lion, hear and tremble, replied the king. Cried echo, tremble. Come forth, says lion, show thyself. Laconic echo answered, elf. Elf, durst thou call me vile pretender? Echo as loud replies, pretender. At this, as jealous of his reign, he growled in rage, she growled again. Incensed the more he chafed and foamed, and round the spacious forest roamed, to find the rival of his throne, who durst with him dispute the crown. A fox, who listened all the while, addressed the monarch with a smile. My liege, most humbly I make bold, though truth may not be always told, that this same phantom which you hear, that so alarms your royal ear, is not a rival of your throne, the voice and fears are all your own. Imaginary terrors scare, a timorous soul with real fear, nay, even the wise and brave are cowed, by apprehensions from the crowd, a frog a lion may disarm, and yet how causeless the alarm, illustration 83, illustration 84. The paper kite, once on a time a paper kite, was mounted to a wondrous height where, giddy with its elevation, it thus expressed self-admiration. See how yon crowds of gazing people admire my flight above the steeple. How would they wonder if they knew all that a kite like me could do? Were I but free, I'd take a flight and pierce the clouds beyond their sight. But ah, like a poor prisoner bound, my string confines me near the ground. I'd brave the eagle's towering wing. Might I but fly without a string. It tugged and pulled while thus it spoke. To break the string, at last it broke, deprived at once of all its stay. In vain it tried to soar away, unable its own weight to bear. It fluttered downward through the air, unable its own course to guide. The wind soon plunged it in the tide. Oh, foolish kite, thou hadst no wing. How couldst thou fly without a string? My heart replied. Oh, Lord, I see how much the kite resembles me, forgetful that by thee I stand. Impatient of thy ruling hand, how oft I've wished to break the lines. Thy wisdom for my lot assigns, how oft indulged a vain desire for something more or something higher, and but for grace and love divine, a fall thus dreadful had been mine. Illustration 86, illustration 87, the RATS and the cheese, if bees a government maintain, why may not rats of stronger brain and greater power as well bethought, by Machiavellian axioms taught, and so they are, for thus of late. It happened in the rat's free state, their prince, his subjects more to please, had got a mighty Cheshire cheese, in which his ministers of state might live in plenty and grow great. A powerful party straight combined, and their united forces joined, to bring their measures into play, for none so loyal were as they, and none such patriots to support, as well the country as the court. No sooner were those dons admitted, but all those wondrous virtues quitted, they all the speediest means devise, to raise themselves and families. Another party well observing, these pampered were, while they were starving, their ministry brought in disgrace, expelled them and supplied their place, these on just principles were known, the true supporters of the throne, and for the subjects' liberty. They'd marry would they freely die, but being well fixed in their station, regardless of their prince and nation, just like the others, all their skill was how they might their paunches fill. On this a rat, not quite so blind, in state intrigues as humankind, but of more honor thus replied, confound ye all on either side, all your contentions are but these, whose arts shall best secure the cheese. Illustration 89, illustration 90, Orelia and the spider, the muslin torn from tears of grief. In vain Orelia sought relief in sighs and plaints she passed the day, the tattered frock neglected lay, while busied at the weaving trade. A spider heard the sighing maid, and kindly stopping in a trice, thus gratis her advice. Turn, little girl, behold in me a stimulus to industry, compare your woes, my dear, with mine, then tell me who should most repine this morning ere you left your room, the chambermaid's remorseless broom, in one sad moment that destroyed, to build which thousands were employed, the shock was great. But as my life, I saved in the relentless strife, I knew lamenting was in vain, so patient went to work again. By constant work, a day or more, my little mansion did restore, and if each tear which you have shed had been a needle full of thread, if every sigh of sad despair had been a stitch of proper care, closed would have been the luckless rent, nor thus the day have been misspent. Illustration 91, illustration 92, the redbreast and the sparrow, perched on a tree hard by a rural cot, a redbreast singing cheered the humble spot, a sparrow on the thatch in critic spleen. Thus took occasion to reprove the strain. Dost thou, cried he, thou dull dejected thing, presume to emulate the birds of spring? Can thy weak warbling dare approach the thrush, or blackbird's accents in the hawthorn bush, or with the lark dost thou poor mimic, vie, or nightingale's unequaled melody? These other birds possessing twice thy fire have been content in silence to admire. With candor judge, the minstrel bird replied. Nor deem my efforts arrogance or pride, think not ambition makes me act this part. I only sing because I love the art, I envy not indeed, but much revere. Those birds whose fame the test of skill will bear, I feel no hope arising to surpass, nor with their charming songs my own to class, far other aims incite my humble strain. Then surely I your pardon may obtain, while I attempt the rural vale to move, by imitating of the lays I love. Illustration 94, the poet and the COBWEBS, a bard, whose pen had brought him more of fame than of the precious ore, in Grub Street garret oft reposed, with eyes contemplative half closed, cobwebs around in antique glory, chief of his household inventory, suggested to his roving brains amazing multitude of scenes. This batch, said he, of murder spinners, who toil their brains out for their dinners, though base, too long unsung has lain, by kindred brethren of Duck Lane. Unknowing that its little plan holds all the cyclopedia of man. This one, whose radiant thread is everywhere from center spread, like orbs in planetary skies, enclosed with rounds of various size, this curious frame I aptly call a cobweb mathematical. In secret holes that dirty line, where never sun presumes to shine, with straws and filth and time beset, where all is fish that comes to net, that musty film, the muse supposes, figures the web of virtuosos. You, where the gaudy insect sings, are cobwebs of the court of kings, where gilded threads conceal the gin and broidered knaves are caught therein. That holly fixed mid mildewed panes of cheerless Christmas the remains. I only dream and sing its cheer. My muse keeps lent throughout the year that holly labored o'er and o'er is cobwebs of the lawyer's lore, where frisky flies on gambols born find out the snare when lost undone. These dangling webs with dirt and age display their tattered equipage. So like the antiquarian crew, that those in every thread I view. Here death disseminated lies, inshrunk anatomies of flies and amputated limbs declare. What vermin lie in ambush there, a baited lure with drugged perdition, a cobweb not misnamed physician. Those plaited webs, long pendant there, of sable bards a subtle snare of all collective disposition, which holds like gout of inquisition, may well denominated be the trapwebs of divinity. But whilst our bard described the scene, A.B. stole through a broken pane, fraught with the sweets of every flower. In taking his adventurous tour, is there entrapped. Exert thy sting, bold bee, and liberate thy wing, the poet kindly dropped his pen, and freed the captive from its den, then musing o'er his empty table. Forgot the moral of his fable. Illustration 97, illustration 98, the epicure and the physician. 200 years ago or more, an heir possessed a miser's store, rejoiced to find his father dead. Till then on thrifty viands fed, unnumbered dishes crowned his board. With each unwholesome trifle stored, he ate and longed to eat again, but sighed for appetite in vain. His food, though dressed a thousand ways, had lost its late accustomed praise. He relished nothing, sickly grew, yet longed to taste of something new. It chanced in this disastrous case, one morn betimes he joined the chase, swift o'er the plain the hunters fly. Each echoing out a joyous cry, a forest next before them lay, he, left behind, mistook his way, and long alone bewildered rode. He found a peasant's poor abode, but fasting kept from 6 to 4, felt hunger, long unfelt before the friendly swain this want supplied, and Joan some eggs and bacon fried. Not dainty now, the squire in haste, fell to and praised their savory taste, nay, said his meal had such a gout. He ne'er in tarts and oleos knew, rejoiced to think he'd found a dish. That crowned his long unanswered wish. With gold his thankful host he paid, who guides him back from whence he strayed, but ere they part so well he dined. His rustic host the squire enjoined to send him home next day a stock of those same eggs and charming hock. He hoped this dish of savory meat would prove that still 'twas bliss to eat, but ah, he found, like all the rest, these eggs were tasteless things at best, the bacon not a dog would touch, so rank, he never tasted such. He sent express to fetch the clown, and thus addressed him with a frown. These eggs, this bacon that you sent, for Christian food were never meant, as soon I'll think the moon's a cheese, as those you dress the same with these, little I thought, sir, says the peasant. I'm glad your worship is so pleasant you joke, I'm sure, for I can swear, the same the fowls that laid them are, and know as well that all the bacon, from one the self-same flitch was taken, the air, indeed, about our green, is known to make the stomach keen. Is that the case? The squire replied. That air shall be directly tried. He gave command a house he hired, and down he goes with hope inspired and takes his cooks, a favorite train, but still they ply their art in vain. Perhaps 'twas riding did the feat he rides, but still he cannot eat. At last a friend to physic bred, perceived his case, and thus he said, be ruled by me, you soon shall eat, with hearty gust the plainest meat, a pint of milk each rising morn. Procure from cow of sable horn shaken 3 drops of morning dew, from twig of ever-verdant yew, it must by your own hand be done, your face turned westward from the sun. With this, ere half an hour is past, well crumbed with biscuit, break your fast, which done, from food or all is vain, for 2 hours and 1 abstain, then dine on 1 substantial dish, if plainly dressed, of flesh or fish. Grave looked the doctor as he spake. The squire concludes, advice to take. And cheated into temperance found, the bliss his former luxury drowned. Illustration 102, illustration 103, the FROGS desiring a king Athens in freedom flourished long. Till license seized the giddy throng, just laws grown weary to obey, they sunk to tyranny a prey. Pisistratus, though mild he swayed, their turbulence had not allayed. Whilst they were cursing in despair, the yoke they had not learned to bear, Aesop their danger to describe. Rehearsed this fable to the tribe, some frogs like you of freedom tired, from Jupiter a king desired, one that should execute the law and keep the dissolute in awe. Jove laughed and threw them down a log that thundering fell and shook the bog. Amongst the reeds the tremblers fled, till one more bold had vanked his head and saw the monarch of the flood lying half smothered in the mud. He calls the croaking race around, a wooden king. The banks resound, fear once removed they swim about him, and gibe and jeer and mock and flout him, and messengers to Jove depute effectively to grant their suit. A hungry stork he sent them then, who soon had swallowed half the fen, their woes scarce daring to reveal. To Mercury by night they steal, and beg him to entreat of Jove the direful tyrant to remove. No, says the god, they chose their lot and must abide what they have got. So you, my friends, had best go home in peace, lest something worse should come. Illustration 105. Illustration 106. The hare and the bramble. A hare, closely pursued, thought it prudent and meet to a bramble for refuge a while to retreat. He entered the covert, but entering found that briars and thorns did on all sides abound, and that though he was safe, yet he never could stir. But his sides they would wound, or would tear off his fur. He shrugged up his shoulders, but would not complain. To repine at small evils, quoth Puss, is in vain. That no bliss can be perfect, I very well knew. But from the same source good and evil doth flow, and full sorely my skin though these briars may rend, yet they keep off the dogs, and my life will defend for the sake of the good. Then let evil be borne, for each sweet has its bitter, each bramble its thorn. Illustration 107. Illustration 108. The horse and the stag. Within a certain pasture, there lived some creatures wild. The sky was blue, the grass was green, the air was very mild. Now though this field was large and fine, they could not live in love but for the grass in one large spot. A horse and stag once strove. The stag was strongest in the strife, and so the battle won, and from the field the horse was sent, and with chagrin was stung. So to the man the horse applied, for help the stag to beat, and so effectual was his help, the stag had to retreat. But when to go away he tried, the man held to him fast. Now that you are of use, he cried, you'll serve me to the last. Illustration 109. Illustration 110. The cat and the old mouse. The mice o'er a certain house, in every spot was found a mouse. So for a cat the mistress went, and to the kitchen Puss was sent. With diligence were many caught and eaten up. The mice were taught that they some cunning must devise to keep the prey from Pussy's eyes, so on a certain shelf so high, to reach which Puss in vain might try. There all the mice together got, and they resolved to leave it not. So Pussy found that to eat them, she must resort to stratagem, and holding fast by means of pegs. She hung suspended by the legs, and downward she then hung her head, and looked as though she were quite dead. And thus she sought to cheat the mice, and from their dwellings them entice. A cunning mouse, well up to trap, on Pussy her two eyes did clap. Aha, she cried, Puss, are you there? Within your reach I would not dare, not e'en though it were proved by law that your whole skin were stuffed with straw. Illustration 112. The fox and the vizor mask. A fox, while walking out one day, into a toy shop chanced to stray. Among the toys that stood arrayed, a vizor mask was there displayed, with rosy cheeks, complexion fair, and ruby lips and auburn hair, and eyes of blue and Grecian nose, and many beauties to disclose, it seemed made. The fox, with sighs, gazed on. Ah, ah, he cries, look at this head it not contains, it has rare beauty but no brains. Moral, the accomplished beau, in air and mien how blessed. His hat well fashioned, and his hair well dressed, but still undressed within, to give him brains, exceeds his hatter's or his barber's pains. Illustration 113. Illustration 114. The goose that laid golden eggs. A man once had a goose, I'm told, which had laid each day an egg of gold. Now if this treasure were well spent, it might make any one content. But no, this man desired more, and though of eggs he had rich store, he thought one day the goose he'd kill, and then at once his pockets fill. So chasing goosey round and round, she soon was caught and firmly bound. He opened her from neck to tail, and then his folly did bewail, for not a single egg was there, and thus he lost this treasure rare. Illustration 115. Illustration 106. The fox and the grapes. A fox once took it in his pate to go beyond a garden gate, to see if there grew on the trees some food his hunger to appease. So in he went, and there he spied some grapes. To reach them hard he tried. Now they were large and luscious too, quite purple and beautiful to view. So up he jumps with many a bound, until exhausted to the ground, he falls. The grapes hang o'er his head, in clusters large. Well, well, he said, you are but green and hard as stone, and all my time away is thrown. I'll leave you to your solitude. You are not fit to make me food. Illustration 117. Illustration 118. The Mouse and the Weasel, a very thin and hungry mouse. Into a granary stole, where stood a basket full of grain, in which was a small hole. After much squeezing he got in, and there he ate his fill, but when he tried to issue out, the hole seemed smaller still. A weasel who stood looking on, cried out in sneering tone, you can't come out, my little dear, until you've smaller grown. You were half starved when you crept in, and now you are quite stout, so cease to eat until you can, as you got in, get out. Illustration 119. Illustration 120. The Miser and His Treasure. In a retired spot, a miser had got a very large treasure in store, and it was his delight, each morn and each night, to count it and add to it more. He had made the hole deep, and he thought none would peep, to find out his secret retreat. But a servant so sly, his master did spy, and thought that his cunning he'd beat. So one dark winter night, he took out his light, and to the field hastened away, and he laughed in his sleeve. To think how 'twould grieve his master to miss it next day, and indeed the distress of his lord you may guess. For words can't describe it, I'm sure, he tore out his hair, clasped his hands in despair, and cried he was ruined and poor. A man passing by his grief chanced to spy and told him, 'Tis useless to mourn, you can look at the hole, to solace your soul, although all the money is gone. Illustration 122. The Jackdaw and the Piaciosiques. Thus, Aesop has the folly shown. To build on merits not your own, a jackdaw, empty, pert, and vain, who held his equals in disdain, one day some beauteous feathers found, left by a peacock on the ground. When in the gaudy plumage dressed, the shallow thing his fortune blessed, with stately gesture strode along, and boldly joined the peacock throng, who, his impertinence to pay, first stripped him and then chased away. The crestfallen coxcomb homeward sneaks, and his forsaken comrade seeks, where'er he comes, with scorn they leave him. And not a jackdaw will receive him, says one he had disdained at last. Such as thou art, thou mightst have passed, and hadst not now been cast behind, the scorn and scandal of thy kind. Illustration 123. Illustration 124. The Sparrow and the Hare, who dares another's ills deride, had best against his own provide. An eagle pouncing on a hare, with piercing cries puss rends the air, when a pert sparrow from a tree insulted thus her misery. Ho, ho, poor puss, thy boasted speed has failed thee then in time of need. Scarce had she spoke when, like an arrow, a vulture darted on the sparrow, ere the poor hare resigned her breath. This sight, she cried, consoles in death, that thou who hast my woes derided, my last of miseries hast divided. Illustration 125. The Ass and the Lion, vain boasters credit may surprise, till known, who knows them will despise. A lion once a hunting took an ass and hid him in a nook, to drive the forest made him bray, that he might seize the passing prey. Long ears set up such horrid cries, that every creature trembling flies. The lion, practiced in his trade, had soon abundant carnage made, satiate with spoil, the ass he calls, and bid him cease his hideous brawls. The king he found with slaughter weary, surrounded by his noble quarry, and puffed with self-importance, said, sir, to some purpose I have brayed, no ass more famously could do. The lion says, but the I knew, or I might have been frightened too. Illustration 126. Illustration 127. The Stag and the Fountain, that good from bad men rarely know. This apologue may serve to show, a stag upon a fountain side beheld his branching horns with pride, while of his spindle shanks ashamed their disproportioned form he blamed. Sudden he hears the hunter's cries, and to the forest nimbly flies. The woods receive their well-known guest. His tangled horns his feet arrest, the hounds approach and seize their prey, who, dying, thus was heard to say, wretch that I am, too late I learn how little we the truth discern. What would have saved me I despised, and what has been my ruin prized. Illustration 128. Illustration 129. The Eagle, the Cat, and the Sow, her nest on high an eagle made, lower a cat her kittens laid, and at the bottom of the tree a sow despised her progeny. Vile puss to gain her wicked ends, much love for both of them pretends, first to the eagle's airy mounts, and thus to her false alarms recounts. Madam, in truth our dangerous state, 'tis with reluctance I relate, but things are really gone so far, conceal them I no longer dare. Night after night the treacherous sow our tree has undermined below, ere long it cannot choose but fall, and then she hopes to eat us all. Successful when she saw her lies, down to the bristly so she hies, my worthy neighbor, crying out, I pray you mind what you're about, for to a certainty I know, the eagle waits but till you go, the thing with great concern I say, to make your little ones her prey. Suspicious dread when thus inspired, puss to her hole all day retired, stealing at night on silent paw. To stuff her own and kitten's maw, to stir nor sow nor eagle dare. What more? Fell hunger ends their care, and long the mischief-making beast, with her base brood on carrion feast, learn hence, ye simples, ere too late, what ills the double-tongued create. Illustration 131. The eagle, the raven, and the tortoise. Who, in their foe united find, force, art, and a remorseless mind, whate'er their strength and prowess be, to perish stand in jeopardy, an eagle once a tortoise held. Safe in his horny house concealed, which he in vain essayed to break, with all the fury of his beak, as with his prey he winged the air, a wily raven ventured near. Your prize is excellent, says she, and if you'll give a share to me, I know, for all his iron hide, how we the dainty may divide. The bargain made, on yonder wall, down, says the raven, let him fall. He listened to the hoary sinner, and they on turtle made their dinner. Thus fraud and force their purpose gain, and nature fortifies in vain. Illustration 132. Illustration 133. The fly and the horse. A fly, upon a coach-box seated, with arrogance the horse is rated. Advance, cries out the paltry thing, unless you mean to feel my sting. Not thee we heed, a horse replied, but him whose skillful hand can guide the rein and whip. We better know than thee when we should stop or go. Thus men without or sense or weight think themselves born to rule the state. Illustration 134, Aesop at play. When an Athenian Aesop saw, playing with schoolboys once at taw, the man with laughter shook his sides, Aesop the laughter thus derides. Of this slack bow before you laid, the meaning sprightly, sir, he said. Explain. A crowd had gathered round. Suppressed, the man no answer found, he puzzled long, but all his wit could on no explanation hit, the laugh on Aesop's side, says he. Why you this bow unbended see, it is because it needs must break, if always bent, so we must take, due relaxation, that the mind. Its vigor may when wanted find. He who in harmless sport employs, a vacant hour, is not unwise. Illustration 135. Illustration 136. The old pilot and the sailors, to one complaining of his fate, Aesop this fable did relate. A ship by raging tempests tossed, the seamen giving all for lost. Twas who should weep and pray the most. Grown calm at once the sky and sea, they shout in joyful ecstasy, the pilot from experience wise. The giddy crew did thus advise, nor much rejoice, nor overgrieve, but decently what comes receive, since good and ill succeed so near, meet ill with hope and good with fear. Illustration 137. The crab and her daughter, not what they hear, but what they see, will children and domestics be. A crab one day her daughter chid, you never do as you are bid, have I not told you o'er and o'er, that awkward gait to use no more, learn ninny, once for all to know. Folks forward and not backward go. Mama, says miss, how strange you talk, have I not learned from you to walk, were I to move the other way, how could I follow you, I pray? Illustration 138. Illustration 139. The sun and the wind, Phoebus and Boreas from on high, upon the road a traveler spy, wearing a cloak for fear of rain, says Boreas, his precautions vain. Gainst me, I'll show you for a joke, how soon I'll make him quit his cloak. Come on, says Phoebus, let us see who best succeeds, or you or me. The wind to blow so fierce began, he almost had upset his man, but still his cloak, for all his roar, was wrapped more closely than before, when Boreas what he could have done. Now for my trial, says the sun, and with his beams so warmed the air, the man his mantle could not bear, but opened first, then threw aside. Learn hence, unbending sons of pride, persuasive manners will prevail when menaces and bluster fail. Illustration 140, Illustration 141. The two POTS forked on a stream to make their way to pot of brass, says pot of clay. Since brass is stout and clay is frail, pray let us at a distance sail. Not your intention that I fear, Sir Brass, adds humble earthenware. While the winds leave you to yourself, but woe betide my ribs of Delph, if it should dash our sides together, for mine would be the damage, whether. Therefore should you or I impel to pray proceed and fare you well. Learn hence, ye folks of low estate, to keep due distance from the great. Illustration 142. Illustration 143. Hercules and the carter, his cart bemired, a carter prayed to Hercules to come and aid. Up, says the god, thou lazy dog, and lift the axle from the bog, thinkst thou gods nothing have to do, but listen to such knaves as you. Illustration 144. The ant and the grasshopper, from a wise Emmet, well sustained, on what her industry had gained, a grasshopper some aid desired. What was his trade? The ant inquired. I've none, the grasshopper replied. I range the country far and wide, singing all day from door to door and have no time to form a store. Shutting her granaries, says the ant. No wonder, friend, you are in want. He who all summer sings may chance in winter to be forked to dance, to spend his time in idle song. The thoughtless grasshopper was wrong and not to give a small supply. The emmet mean and niggardly. Illustration 145. Illustration 146. The crow and the pitcher, patience and ingenuity. The want of natural means supply. A thirsty crow some water found, but in a vessel so profound that with her neck at utmost stretch, a single drop she could not reach, then stones she in the pitcher places, which to the top the water raises, and by this innocent device, her thirst at leisure satisfies. Illustration 147, the angler and the little fish. An angler a small salmon caught, who with much earnestness besought that he would let her go, says she. What can you do with such as me? Next year, when grown a little bigger, I in your bag might make a figure. The prudent man replied, no, no, into my pouch, though small you go, a bird in hand is better far than two that in the bushes are. Illustration 148, the frog and the fox. Let us our own defects amend, ere to guide others we pretend. A sallow, wrinkled, spotted frog, to turn physician left the bog. He every malady could cure, he said, that animals endure. First on yourself your science show, says Reynard, that the world may know your skill and knowledge, pray begin of those foul spots to clear your skin, for while you look so sick and pale, to vend your drugs you'll ne'er prevail. Illustration 148. The ape and her young ones. Apid cubs, one much she loved, other small affection proved. Alarmed, she hears the hunter's cries, and catching up her darling flies, through fear she stumbled o'er some stones, and broke the little favorite's bones, the other to her back who clung. Uninjured went with her along, mothers, beware, the fondled child. By too much tenderness is, while those who hardships have endured, to suffer life are best inured. Illustration 150, Illustration 151, the fir tree and the thorn. Lowly and contented state is farthest from the wounds of fate. A fir tree upon a humble thorn from his high top looked down with scorn. For loftiest fanes we grow, she said. Of us the tallest masts are made, while thou, poor bramble, canst produce nothing of ornament or use. Great tree, the modest thorn replied, when the sharp axe shall pierce your side, in vain you then may wish to be unsought for and unknown like me. Illustration 152, Illustration 153. The ass in the lion's skin, fools may on other fools impose, the sage their real value knows. An ass once found a lion's skin, and rolling up himself therein, from every fold that he came nigh, made flocks and herds and shepherds fly, ranging the country round at last. He meets his master where he passed, who long ears instantly descries, through his magnificent disguise, laying his cudgel on his side. Get home, thou stupid fool, he cried. With others for a lion pass, I know thee for an arrant ass. Illustration 154, Illustration 155. The dog in the manger. A mastiff in a stable lay, couched on a manger full of hay. When anything drew near to eat, he quickly forced it to retreat. An ox then cried, detested creature, how vile is thy malignant nature, which will not others let enjoy, that which thou never canst employ. Illustration 156. The stag and the vine, a stag, pursued with horn and hound. In a thick vineyard shelter found, soon as he thought the danger past, he on the vine began to feast. The huntsman hears the rustling noise, and through half-eaten leaves descries, his branching horns the pack recalls, and merited the creature falls, to his ingratitude a prey, those their protectors who betray, unpitying all the world will see, consigned to death and infamy. Illustration 157. The mischievous dog, titles and ribbons bought with shame, folly and vice but more proclaim. A man who owned a vicious dog, upon his collar fixed a log, which the vain cur supposed to be, a note of worth and dignity. A mastiff saw his foolish pride. Puppy, indignantly he cried. That thing is put about your neck your mischievous designs to check, and to who see you to declare of what a currish race you are. Illustration 158. The sick man and the physician. Woe to the land where those who guide, to please the people's foolish pride, persuade them there is naught to dread. When ruin threatens o'er their head, a patient asked to tell his pains, of thirst and shivering cold complains. "'Tis very good, the doctor said. He has but to remain in bed and take the medicines I shall send, the thing will soon be at an end. When next the question was repeated, the man complained he much was heated. This, cried the leech, is better still. And thus to each increasing ill, that it was going well, he cried, till the poor martyr sunk and died. Illustration 159. Illustration 160. The farmer and his sons. Work. Work, my boys, with hand and mind, your labors you will fruitful find. A husbandman, about to die, called on his children to come nigh. I leave, he says, a small estate, but wherewithal to make it great, for know a treasure it contains, if you to search will take the pains. He died. The sons dug all the ground, and there no hidden treasure found, but so productive was the soil, the crop by far o'erpaid the toil. Says one, when they the corn had sold, this treasure twas our sire foretold. Illustration 161. Illustration 162. The swallow and the birds, those who of guide stand most in need, are least inclined advice to heed. A traveled swallow, learned and wise, to all his feathered neighbors cries, see you yon laborers there below, what is it, think ye, that they sow? Tis hemp, my friends, of which are made the nets that for us all are laid, the moment yonder men are gone. Then pick the seeds up one by one, the gay inhabitants of air, for his precaution little care. The seedling sprung, again the swallow urges his good advice to follow, again his counsel they deride. The plants full grown and cut and dried, beaten and spun, the nets were made, and the unwary birds betrayed, regretting in their hapless fate their incredulity too late. Learn hence the danger to foresee, nor wait for their maturity. Illustration 163. Illustration 164. The boasting traveler, a fellow, who abroad had been, told marvels he had done and seen. When resident at Rhodes, he said, a leap of 20 yards he made, over a barrier 10 feet high, a dozen witnesses were by. Come on, says one at the same table, yon ditch and fence to o'erleap you're able. They're not by much, so high or wide, here let the experiment be tried. Suppose yourself at Rhodes, and we your faithful witnesses will be. The man replied that he today was not quite well, and stole away. Who boast of what they cannot do, both knavery and folly show. Illustration 165. Illustration 166. The old woman and her maids. Better known evils to endure than seek by wrong a doubtful cure. A thrifty dame her maids awoke at the first crowing of the cock. They of such early rising turd, to kill the harmless cock conspired. The dame, to hear him crow and wait, next morning lay in bed till 8. But when she knew the trick they had played, she caused alarum to be made, and rung it daily in their ears, 2 hours before the dawn appears. Illustration 167. Illustration 168. Industry and sloth, insidious, sloth her object gains, if but a hearing she obtains. A youth asked why so long in bed. I listen to a cause, he said. As soon as I unclose my eyes, first industry excites to rise. Up, up, she says, to meet the sun, your task of yesterday's undone. Lie still, cries sloth. It is not warm, an hour's more sleep can do no harm, you will have time your work to do, and leisure for amusement too. Illustration 169. Illustration 170. The shepherd turned merchant, fair, whether sailors keep at home, for be assured the storm will come. A shepherd of an inland breed brought to the coast his flocks to feed the beauty of a summer sea. A merchant tempted him to be. He sold his sheep, and with the sail purchased of dates and ample bale, he sailed. A furious tempest rose into the sea, his dates he throws, and swimming from the bark to land, arrives half dead upon the strand, to one soon afterwards who stood, pleased with the calmness of the flood. Aye, aye, the simple shepherd said, with dates again it would be fed. Illustration 171. Illustration 172. The spendthrift and the swallow, a fool, who all had thrown away, when wandering penniless one day, perceived a swallow. Ho, says he, summer is come at last I see, and to a Jew his mantle sold. Next day it was severely cold, starved as he walked, the bird he found, frozen to death upon the ground. Ah, what a fool was I, he cried, when on one swallow I relied. Those who too readily believe, for their credulity may grieve. Illustration 173. The eagle and the crow. The wise well know their force to weigh, nor what they cannot do essay. A carrion crow an eagle saw, seize on a lamb with beak and claw, conceiving he could better do, he pounces on a well-fed ewe, but he and not the sheep was caught, for when to fly with it he sought, his feet entangled in the wool, the shepherd seized the helpless fool. Illustration 174. Illustration 175. The wolf and the shepherd's boy, in wantonness a shepherd's boy, alarmed the neighbors with his cry, the wolf, the wolf. And when they came, of their lost labor made his game, at last the wolf when there indeed, his real cries they did not heed, he and his flock a prey were made, and for his lies he dearly paid. Those who are known to have deceived, when they speak truth, are not believed. Illustration 176. Illustration 177. The fox without a tail, fashions, and modes we often see. Made to conceal deformity, those to whom nature has been kind, should leave such fopperies behind. A fox who in a trap was taken, resigned his brush to save his bacon, ashamed that all the world should know. His cunning had been cheated so, to an assembly of the nation. He made the following oration. I oft have thought the tails we wear, a troublesome appendage are, where's their utility, I pray? They serve but to obstruct our way, nor ornamental do I find, to drag this ponderous length behind. For my part, without more debate, I move our tails we amputate. Please, sir, to show yourself behind, says one to smoke the jest inclined, and who discovered what it was, we there perhaps shall see the cause, ere we your prudent counsel take, why you this curious motion make? His bare posteriors, when they found, loud laughter shook the benches round, nor could the fox without a tail. To introduce the mode prevail, illustration 179, the men and the oyster, any, partition better make. Then all the hungry law should take, by the seaside two travelers found, a fine large oyster on the ground his claim each obstinately lays. I saw it first, one eager says, I picked it up, the other cries, mine, mine is certainly the prize. They talked as usual, loud and long, and more they reasoned, more were wrong, till they a neighboring lawyer see, passing, and mutually agree, to take him for their referee with legal dignity of face. He heard them both relate the case, your claims are good, then gravely said. And a brave lawsuit would have made, which to prefer I cannot tell, so each of you must take a shell, and as the oyster is but one, that I myself will swallow down to stink it otherwise had lain, and all your cash been spent in vain, you're cheaply off, go home content, and faith the fish was excellent. Illustration 181, the shepherd and his dog, a dog, his master so deceived, he was the best of curs believed, the flock was trusted to his care, whene'er the shepherd was not there. And in the house, a favored guest, he always fed upon the best, the treacherous guard his charge betrayed, and on the sheep in secret prayed, the master, when the crime was proved, with double indignation moved, about his neck the halter tied, himself, the dog for mercy cried, you let the wolf escape, he said, who much more slaughter oft has made. Wretch, says the man, the wolf declares, hostility and boldly dares, he has no confidence abused, but coward, thou my trust hast used against myself. And on this tree, without delay, shalt hanged be. Illustration 182, illustration 183, the countryman and the justice. The law still lends the readiest aid, when well her ministers are paid. A countryman, by power oppressed, seeking to have his wrongs redressed, oft to the justice when in vain admittance he could ne'er obtain, but still was bid again to come, unwell, engagged, or not home, the wily rustic took a kid. One day, and in a basket hid, and when he to the house drew near, began to pinch him by the ear, so that the porter from the hall might hear the little fatling squall, the man his master's mind who knew, open the door and let him through. The shepherd, laughing as he passed, says to his kid, thy cries at last, an audience for my wrongs obtain, thy flesh perhaps redress will gain. Illustration 184, illustration 185, the cock and the fox. The world applauds the lucky hit. When it beholds the biter bit, a treacherous fox invited down, a cock who on a tree had flown. Do you not know, my friend, says he, bird, beast, fish, reptile, man agree, to live henceforth in amity, come down and celebrate the day. Troth, quoth the cock, you truly say, for hounds I see come o'er the dell, with open mouths the news to tell. Adieu, says Wren, tis best to go, those dogs the treaty may not know. Illustration 186, illustration 187. The blind man and the lame, who, kind assistance, give and take, life's arduous journey best will make, two men, one blind, the other lame, to pass a ford together came. The stream was rapid, and the way, obliquely thwart the current lay to his companion, says the blind, yon winding road I ne'er shall find. Nor my poor limbs, the lame replied, the current's rapid force abide. Come, says the blind, my loins are strong, I'll bear you on my back along, while you to guide me give the word. And thus they safely crossed the ford. Illustration 188, illustration 189, the man and the serpent, there's in the world a cursed race, of nature so perverse and base, if from the gallows you should save, a dangerous enemy you have, a countryman a serpent found, stiffened with frost upon the ground, and took her home, but when the fire began new vigor to inspire, swelling her neck with angry eyes, she fills the cot with hissing cries, the rustic then his axe did take. Is this then the return you make, is this your gratitude? He said, and knocked the reptile on the head. Illustration 190, illustration 191, the two STREMS, those who display much dash and din, have seldom anything within a weary traveler one day, crossed o'er a river in his way, alarmed to see the foaming tide, dashing o'er rocks from side to side, nevertheless his course to keep, he ventured in with trembling step, and found the water neither deep, nor footing bad, and got well o'er. When he had traveled some leagues more, He to another river came, that smoothly flowed, a silent stream. This he thought easily to pass, but ere he in the middle was, he plunged into a gulf profound, and for his feet no bottom found, but forced to swim with all his might, got to the shore in piteous plight. Illustration 192, illustration 193, the sot and his wife, inveterate, sin is seldom curd. Wife had long a sot endured. Who all his time in taverns spent, while his affairs in ruin went, once as insensible he lay, she dressed him in a corpse's array, and with the undertaker's aid, into a burying vault conveyed. The fumes dispersed, the man awakes all for reality he takes, when by the glimmering of a lamp, he saw his mansion drear and damp, reflecting how his life had passed, a forced repentance came at last, the wife with suited voice and dress, presented an infernal mess. Good trap, pray take away your meat, I have no appetite to eat, he cried, but faith I'm devilish dry, can't you a bowl of wine supply? The woman, seeing all was vain, restored him to his casks again, consoled with certainty that he ere long a real corpse must be. Illustration 194, illustration 195, the farmer and his quarrelsome sons, three sons an honest farmer had, and it so happened ne'er a lad could with the other two agree, all quarreling perpetually, their time in idle contests spent, garden and farm to ruin went, and the good farmer and his wife led but a miserable life. One day, as this unhappy sire sat musing by his evening fire, he saw some twigs in bundles stand, tied for the basket maker's hand, taking up one. My boys, says he, which is the strongest, let me see, he who this bundle breaks in twain, the preference and this prize shall gain, showing a pair of Sunday shoes. The rivals every effort use, in vain. Their utmost force when tried, the father took the twigs untied, and giving to them one by one, the work immediately was done. Yon twigs, he says, that broken lie, this useful lesson may supply, that those in amity who live and succor to each other give, double their forces to resist oppression and their work assist. Illustration 197, the fig tree and the flowering shrub, flowers which many leaves display, in fruitless beauty fade away, cries one of these with saucy sneer, to a plain fig tree growing near. How comes it, honest friend, that thou dost in the spring no blossoms show? Says he, I keep them out of view, for fear I should resemble you, and in the autumn not produce, of permanence and solid use. Who soon and much essay to shine, may dread a premature decline. Illustration 198, illustration 199, the farmer and the landlord, a farmer of an honest fame, one morning to his landlord came. Alas, my lord, he weeping said, gored by my bull, your ox is dead, what must be done? The case is plain, replies the lord, the creature slain, the owner of the bull must pay, let it be done without delay. He even give your worship long to live. I hope you will a good one give, for mine was good. How, yours, my friend, let me your story comprehend, your bull, you say, my ox has gored? Forgive me the mistake, my lord, in my confusion I have made, mine was the ox that must be paid, but 'tis all one what's just for me, the same must for your worship be, I'll tell the steward what you say. Not yet, we'll think of it today, further inquiry must be had, perhaps your fences were but bad, perhaps, but come again tomorrow. The honest laborer saw with sorrow that justice wears a different face, when for themselves men put the case. Illustration 201, the schoolboy and the monitor, at play on Thames's verdant side. A schoolboy fell into the tide, where providentially there stood a willow bending o'er the flood, buoyed on its branch he floating lay, the monitor by that way. The lad entreats his life to save, the don replies with aspect grave. Sirrah, what business had you there? How vain is all our watchful care? You never heed a word we say, your disobedience you shall pay. First, says the boy, pray stretch your hand, I'll hear you when I come to land. This is for those, with vain parade, who give advice instead of aid. Illustration 202, illustration 203, the miller and his ass, a rustic, bringing to the fair an ass that he might show him there, sleek and well-looking let him trot, he followed with his son on foot, the first they met upon the road, at our pedestrians laughed loud. Look at those two-legged asses, cried, who trudge on foot when they might ride. The father with the hint complies, makes the boy mount. Now other cries assail their ears by graybeards blamed. Sirrah, you ought to be ashamed to ride and let your father walk. Again he listened to their talk. The sire got up, the youth got down, when passing through a country town, at every door the mother said, a murrain light on thy old head, haste thou no bowels for thy kind, at least take up the lad behind. This done they next were thus addressed. Two lubbers on a little beast, they fitter are to carry him. Complying with this senseless whim, upon a pole his feet in air, the ass they on their shoulders bear, now laughing shouts spread far and wide, the ass's ligatures untied. Proceed, my son, then said the man, to please the world, do all we can, since 'tis impossible, you see, to please ourselves content will be. Illustration 205, Illustration 206, The Dreamer and His Son, Mortals. Bring down upon their head the very miseries most they dread, the only son of a rich knight. In hunting daily took delight, the father living in alarm, lest he should come to any harm, dreamed that he saw him on the ground, rent with the lion's fatal wound. The youth, allowed to hunt no more, impatiently confinement bore, remarking one unlucky day, in the fine chamber where he lay, a lion painted on the wall. Thou art, he cried, the cause of all. With idle rage the wall he struck, and in his hand an iron stuck, which piercing bones and sinews through, festered and then a gangrene grew, and thus the father's ill-timed care deprived him of his son and heir. Illustration 207, Illustration 208, The Old Man and Death. Though life be welcome to the wise, death cannot take him by surprise, aware that every day and hour he holds but at the tyrant's power, that beauty, talents, worth are vain, a moment's respite to obtain, nothing more known, and yet how rare it is with courage to prepare. For this inevitable day all hope a little more delay, one who had suffered many a year, and to a century drew near, at last complained that unawares. Death came, unsettled his affairs. My will is not completely made, a little time, he trembling said. A little longer let me live, some warning tease but fair to give, my grandson is expected home, at least pray let the doctor come. Poor helpless driveler, Death replied. 10 years ago thou shouldst he have died, thy friends, thy foes, thyself lived, almost an age thou hast survived, some who their day had scarce begun, others beneath their noontide sun. Time's deepest lines engrave thy brow. And dost thou hesitate to go, idiot, what warning wouldst he thou have? 1 foot already in the grave, sight, hearing, feeling, day by day, sunk gradual in a long decay, I blame myself for my neglect, thou'st not a moment to expect. When failing nature warns the sage, sees death a refuge from old age, and rising from life's lengthened feast, willing retires a sated guest. Illustration 210, Illustration 211, The Painter. When candid critics deign to blame, their index points the road to fame. But when dull fools your works admire, throw them at once into the fire. In Rome there dwelt, in days of yore, a painter deep in graphic lore. His touch was firm, his outline true, and every rule full well he knew. A Mars he painted, meant to show how far his learned skill could go. The work complete, he called a friend, on whose good taste he could depend. The friend was honest, spoke his thought, and fairly pointed out the fault, that overworked in every part. It showed too much laborious art. The painter argued for his rules, and cited maxims from the schools, still the judicious critic held. The labor should be more concealed, while they disputed on his stricture. A coxcomb came to see the picture, entering, he cries, good heavens, how fine, the piece, I swear, is quite divine. The sword, the knot, the belt, the leather, the steel, the gold, the silk, the feather, are perfect nature altogether. The painter, reddening with despite, whispers, my friend, by Jove, you're right. 'Tis not enough our art to know, till less of it we learn to show, my picture must be done again. I see, to please discerning men. Illustration 213, Illustration 214, The Cobbler and the Nabob. A cobbler, who had fixed his stall against a nabob's palace wall, worked merrily as others play, and sung and whistled all the day, a prey to many an anxious care. Less merry was the Lord, by far, and often in the night he thought it hard sleep was not to be bought, and if towards morn he got a doze, the cobbler troubled his repose. One day he bid the man attend, and, well, says he, my honest friend, how is it that so well you thrive, you seem the happiest man alive? Pray, what may be the profit clear that you can earn within the year? What in a 12-month I can earn, my lord, was never my concern. 'Tis quite enough, the cobbler said, if I can gain my daily bread. Take then this note, 'twas 20 pound. But sing not with so shrill a sound, good man, the generous nabob cries, when early to your work you rise, for then I want to close my eyes. Delighted to his stall he went, but now he first felt discontent. All day he neither worked nor ate, for thinking of his happy fate. At night, when he retired to bed, he placked the note beneath his head, but could not sleep a single wink, what he should do with it to think, and every little noise he heard. That folks were come to rob him, feared, living in constant dread to all, who did but look towards his stall, so lean and sallow he was grown, the man was hardly to be known. At last he begged the Lord to see, take back your present, sir, said he, riches, I find, are not for me, tomorrow I my song renew, not less my gratitude to you, and care henceforward I will take, my chance your slumber do not break. Illustration 216, Illustration 217. The Horse and His Rider. A man, a palfrey long possessed, a quiet, serviceable beast, spavined indeed and somewhat blind. But still his way he well could find, and if he stumbled now and then, was soon upon his feet again. In short, for many a year the pack had borne him safely on his back, till riding out one fatal day, he overheard some coxcomb say, "For such a man, 'tis quite a shame to mount a horse old, blind, and lame." "Aye," replied one, "I know a steed would nobly carry him indeed, young, vigorous, beautiful, and sound, his like is nowhere to be found." In evil hour an ear he lent, to view this boasted courser went, unwary on his back he got, and tried to put him on a trot, he reared and plunged and leaped about, till from his seat he shook him out, then kicking, pitched him o'er his head, and laid him on the pavement dead. The vicious creature left at large, on all his fury would discharge, this from behind his heels surprise. Trod under foot that sprawling lies, another who would seize the reins, is bit and mangled for his pains, but want of nourishment and rest. Will tame at last the fiercest beast, and rage itself suspends its course, exhausted by its proper force, lightning no more his eyes inspire, no more his nostrils snorted fire, at bay he stood, fatigued and lank, with flagging ears and beating flank, an active jockey, stout and able, contracts to bring him to the stable, soothes, and his neck begins to pat. And the corn rattles in his hat, by hunger drawn, repelled by fear. The courser neighs, retires, comes near, lured with the smell, begins to eat. The jockey vaulted in the seat, with vigorous hand the bridle plied, and stuck the rowels in his side. Some bounds and curvets still he made, but soon submissively obeyed. The horseman who such skill had shown, resolved to keep him for his own, aware that constant work alone can keep this wicked spirit down. He night and day is on his back, to lead him to some new attack. No road is safe, nor far nor near. This highwayman is everywhere. Illustration 220. Illustration 221. The good minister, an honest minister discracked. Such are not easily replacked. Found the sweet leisure in his fields, to virtuous minds retirement yields. The king, who had his foes believed, the loss of him ere long perceived, to bring him back again intent, to his retreat alone he went. "My friend, you must return with me," he said, "your value now I see." "Forgive me," the recluse replied, "here I determine to abide, by sad experience well I know, were I to court again to go, and all my best endeavors do, to serve my country, sir, and you, art and intrigue so much prevail. Again I certainly should fail against your will and approbation, and the good wishes of the nation, you'd find yourself compelled to yield, and I once more must quit the field." The honest man who will not bend to circumstance or condescend, to pay his court to knave or fool, will never long a nation rule. Illustration 222. Illustration 223. The swan and the cook. A man once had a swan and goose among his birds and beasts. The one was destined for a pet, the other for a feast. Sometimes you saw them sailing gracefully on the current, side by side. Sometimes they played a game of tag, or plunged into the tide. One day the master ordered the cook to kill the goose and roast it for his dinner. It was fat and fit for use. But the cook had taken a drop too much, and it had gone to his head, so when he went out for the goose, he took the swan instead. He seized the swan fast by the throat, and would have killed it soon, but the bird saw he was to die, and he his throat did tune, and warbled out his farewell lay. The cook straight dropped his knife. In great surprise, what, cried he, "shall I take the life of a musical bird like this? No, no, it must not be so. To the garden he shall go back, and ne'er be killed by me." Illustration 225. The lynx and the mole. A lynx once met by chance a mole, just emerging from his hole. The lynx with penetrating eye, the beauties of the place did spy, and asked the mole to take a share in the fine prospect, rich and rare. "I've seldom found so good a place. From this small hill you see a space extended far beneath your view. I like it much. Pray do not you see now the sun begins to rise, and with crimson tints the skies. It spreads all round its genial heat, and nature now enjoys a treat." "Well, well," the mole aloud did cry, "you may see this and more, but I can only now before me see a very heavy mist." "Truly, now," said the lynx, "I clearly see the difference twixt you and me. My eyes see with perception bright, while yours are always dark as night. Go to your hold beneath the ground, while I will range the forest round." Illustration 226. Illustration 227. The old cat and the young mouse. A young mouse of little experience thought to soften an old cat, and besought her clemency by asking for his life at her expense. Said he, "A mouse, or e'en a rat, is not a great charge on the house, and I shall not starve out the host. Besides, I seldom quit my post, and when I do, a grain of corn has served me since I first was born. Now I am thin, pray let me be. I'll serve your children yet, you'll see." Thus to the cat spoke the poor mouse. The other answered, "You mistake. When unto me this tone you take, you might as well talk to the deaf. As to so old a cat as I, and through your tricks I spy, die, you can go and chatter to the fates, my children will be fed on better cates. Moral: youth is sanguine and hopes for all old age is pitiless, so says our moral. Illustration 228. Illustration 229. The two friends, two real friends, lived in Monomotapa. All that belonged to one was for the other, and each was unto each a brother. The people of that country thus make better friends than among us. One night when fast asleep, they each were sound reposing. The eldest darted from his couch and stopped the others dozing. He runs to see his friend, awakes the slaves, and in the end, even his friend is quite alarmed and goes to seek the other with sword and purse. My brother, what can the matter be? Here I am armed, you see, ready with sword to fight for you, and here is money ready too, if you have lost in play. You're even welcome to my handsome slave, with jet black hair and eyes so grave. No. Said the other, I need not. But ere I slept tonight, I thought, being in a trance, that you were sad, and as the thought nigh drove me mad, I hurried to your tent and found you sleeping quite content. Moral: which of the two best loved the other? Here is a thing to ponder on. A true friend is a precious thing, and all to aid you he will bring, but with excessive love the other, in dreams, was thinking of his brother. Illustration 231. Illustration 232. The sick stag, in a land where stags are many, one fell sick, and not any of all his friends delayed to come, to offer aid and consolation, in his sorrowful situation, said he, my friends, pray let me die in the right way, nor shed such tears. Not at all the consolers, with many a tear and many a sigh, had come resolved by him to lie, and when they left they helped themselves, upon his lands the greedy elves, and drank from out his brook, and every one of them such suppers took, that when the stag revived, he found his meals reduced, so that while his friends had thrived, he had to fast or die of hunger. Illustration 233. Illustration 234. The forest and the woodman. A woodman had broken or misplaced the wooden handle of his axe. This loss could not be well replaced. So Master Woodman humbly prayed from all the trees a single branch, and promised to go elsewhere when he made again his livelihood, and he would touch nor oak nor pine. The trees, which were all very good, furnished for him new arms, and soon commenced all their alarms and their regret. The axe was mended, and his repentance all was ended. The miserable wretch but used it, and as he had before abused it, by felling down the forest trees, which groaned in spirit and which died, by arms they had themselves supplied. Moral: this is the way the world goes on. We use our benefits against our benefactors. I am tired of speaking thereupon. Till we obtain our wants, we are good actors. Illustration 235. Illustration 236. The elephant and the monkey of Jupiter. Formerly, the elephant and the rhinoceros, disputing on the light of empire, resolved to end the combat thus, by fighting to their heart's desire. The day was fixed when it was heard that the monkey of Sire Jupiter had been seen in the air, poised on a cloud like any bird. The elephant was quite convinced that to arrange the new election, an interest the god evinced, and felt for him a great affection. He went to see the monkey's highness, expecting him to speak about the fight, but not a word said monkey. At this sight, the elephant perceived that he must speak himself, and so began. Sire Jupiter, said he, between rhinoceros and me we'll see a royal combat of legation, a tournament for all the nation. I suppose you have already heard this news, said monkey, not a word. The elephant, ashamed and quite surprised, looked on the monkey with astonished eyes. Said monkey, in celestial place, a fly or leopard are of equal race. Was it not then because of us, said elephant, that you descended? Nay, said the monkey, quite offended. I left the heavens to share a grain of corn among some ants, nor knew that you were born. We have the care of mortal things, but all are equals in our eyes, and at your talk I feel surprise. Illustration 238. Illustration 239. The woodcutter and death. A woodman was toiling, all covered with dust, but reach home with his faggot ere night he must. Panting and weary he walks quite slow. How to get home he does not know, at last quite exhausted with toil and trouble, with the weight of the burden and his years bent double. He puts down his faggot and thinks of his pains. What is his work and what are his gains? How since he came into this weary world, by the wheels of blind fortune around he's been twirled. Was he not poor, a woodcutter at best? Oft without bread, always without rest. He thinks of his wife, his children, his taxes. At last quite warm with the subject he waxes. He calls on death, who comes without delay. The woodman in terror knows not what to say. Death asks what to do, the man wishes he should. Oh, help me, he said, with this faggot of wood. My poor bones ache and my limbs they crack. So help me to put it upon my back. Illustration 241. The rat and the oyster. A rat who lived in the field. A rat of little wit, once grew tired of his father's house and quietly left it. He left the field, the grain and wheat, set out to travel, left his hole, and just as soon as he was out. How large and spacious on the whole is this great country spread about. Here are the Apennines and their Caucasus. The smallest mole hill is a mountain. At the end of some days, our traveler arrives at a certain canton where every oyster thrives, and our famed traveler turned very pale, thinking he saw great vessels setting sail. "Mercy," said he, "my father was a dunce. He did not dare to travel even once, while I have seen already the maritime empire and traveled to my heart's desire." From a certain learned man, the rat had heard of such things, and thinks he has seen all he can. Among the many oysters closed, there was one open which reposed. Mouth gaping in the sun, the learned traveled man, the rat, approached, thinking to make an excellent repast, and began to take a bite at the fine oyster, plump and fat, whereupon closing on our rat, the oyster caught him tight and held him with all its might. Moral: this fable goes to show that those mistake who think that all they know, when knowing nothing of the world, their giddy brain is quickly whirled. And hence this moral let us make, that he is caught who thinks to take. Illustration 243, illustration 244, the PHYSICINS doctor. So much the worse, went out to sea, a patient sick as one could be, his brother so much the better, having received an urgent letter, came also the sick man to visit, so much the worse declared he'd die, so much the better asked him why. And while their plans they thus discourse, the sick man died, so much the worse. So much the better now declared, that if the sick man had not despaired, he would have lived. So much the worse said, "I was right, agree with me, our patient's dead, as you can see." Moral: there's wisdom in the saying, by my troth, too many cooks will spoil the broth. Illustration 245, illustration 246, the mountain in labor, a mountain, thought to be in labor, made such a horrid noise, that round it each stranger came and neighbor, thinking the end of all this noise would be a city, quite as large as three, having drawn all the province round, the mountain from a little mound, let out a mouse. Moral: when I think upon this fable, of which the narration is false, and the sense true, it puts me much in mind of authors not a few, who boast that they are able to write on any subject as they please, and after all do nothing. Illustration 247, illustration 248. The cat metamorphosed into a woman. A man was passionately fond of his cat. He thought she was pretty and sleek and all that, and she purred in the softest tone. He wished to make her his own. This man, by prayers, by tears, by sorcery and charms, changed pussy to a woman fair and took her in his arms. But in the wainscot soon a rat made itself manifest, and very soon the pussy cat could still no longer rest. Her foolish husband, who believed that nothing had of cat remained, and as his wife had her received, was now, I warrant, somewhat pained. Next time the vermin came, pussy was surer of her game, for having changed her face, the mice, not frightened, did not change their pace, and the astonished spouse was very glad to change her back, and was no more cat mad. Moral: what in the bone is born, will in the flesh remain, both night and morn, and ne'er come out again. Illustration 250, the frog and the rat. He who another thinks to injure may in the end destroy himself. A rat who fed exceeding well was by a frog invited out to dine. "The voyage," said froggy, "will be quickly made if you will tie your foot to mine." Frog vaunted the delight of bathing, praised the varieties they'd met upon the way, and when the rat consented to be tied, attempted to bear him away. The rat, half drowned, resisted all he could. The frog imaged the dinner he would make. Suddenly, flying from a neighboring wood, a hawk appeared, and quickly did he take both of the combatants up in his bill, before they e'en had time to make their will, and quite delighted did the greedy sinner make off of fish and flesh a hearty dinner. For in the hawk's dominions fast days are never kept. Now if the frog had acted as he ought, and had not tried to dine off the poor rat, they would not both have perished. To make fat a pampered hawk and master rat, had he not been so curious about aquatic government, had from the scrape got safely out. Moral: a scheme or a conspiracy, be it all plotted well as safe, 'twould seem as it could be, and sure of all success, may nonetheless entirely fail, and grand conspirators and all bewail the day that set them scheming. Illustration 252, illustration 253, the lion and the fly. A lion, by a gadfly worried, half maddened by his sting, exclaimed, "Be off, vile fly, mean, pitiful, base thing." After the fly had ended his repast, fully exhausted feels the beast at last, and roared so that he shook the earth, while the victorious fly met in the spider's web his destiny. Moral: two morals draw from this tale. First, we should fear the smallest enemy, and second, we may escape great perils, and from a trifling cause may die. Illustration 254, illustration 255, the two mules. Two mules went traveling on their way, one with a sack of corn, the other with gold and bells so gay, most gaily tripped along, proud of so rich a load. He kept the bells a-ringing, and was so proud, had he known how, he would have commenced singing. Soon some robbers rude appeared, who stopped this mule upon his road, and very soon they had him cleared of all his weight of precious gold, falling beneath their blows. "I die," the expiring trotter cried. "Had you been," said the other, "low as I, you would not thus have died. Be moderate when you are high, nor glory o'er the passers-by." Illustration 256. Illustration 257. Jupiter and the farmer. Jupiter had a farm to let. Mercury advertised it, and people came, made offers, listened all the same, made some objection, one declared the land was rough and dry, and full of sand. One had this reason, one had that, until at last a man appeared, who said he'd try to farm it, agreed that he might have any weather that he chose. Behold, as soon as he but yawns, it blows, or rains, or is quite clear. His neighbors, even the most near, are not affected by these changes. In usual route, their weather ranges, they have good crops, but he had none. At last, when tired, he began complaining unto Jupiter. The next year the same thing, changes of weather he can bring, and the neighbors no more than the Americans are troubled by the farming of his lands. At last, tired out with all his strife in vain, he yields his power to the god of rain, acknowledging that all along the god did right and he did wrong. Moral: let us conclude that providence, for man ordains much better than we can. Illustration 259. Illustration 260. The cock, the cat, and the little mouse. A young mouse who had nothing seen was nearly caught. You shall hear how he told his mother the adventure. He said, "Pray listen now, I started out to frolic at a venture, when two fine animals appeared before my eyes and filled me with surprise. One was soft, benign, and sweet. The other, turbulent and full of inquietude, had a loud voice, piercing and rude, and on his head a piece of flesh. A sort of arm raised him up in the air, as though to fly out of a mesh. His tail was spread out like a fan. Now it was a cock of which our little mouse made to his mother this fine picture, describing him like an enthusiast. He beat," said he, "his flanks with his two arms, making such a noise and such a din, that, frightened half to death, I hurried in, although I pique myself upon my courage, and heartily I cursed him in my heart, for but for him I'd taken part. In conversation with the gentle creature, who my advances would encourage, she is velvety like us, with a long tail, a modest look and sparkling eyes, and is much like a rat. She spies the objects round her. I turned pale on hearing the other creature's din, or else I should have asked her in. My child," said the mother, "this last was a cat, an enemy of every mouse and rat, the other a cock, whom do not fear. Perhaps we may dine on him here. Take care, whatever they may seem, of judging people by their mien." Illustration 262. Illustration 263. The monkey, the animals on the death of the lion, during his life, prince of the country, resolved to elect a king to try on the regal crown, and chose a monkey. Because after the animals had all tried on the regal crown, or let it fall, because their heads were all too big, or too small, too horned, or too thick, the monkey slipped through it, and with it cut up many a trick, which they all thought refined, and chose him with one mind. Only the fox regretted the election, and swore to reign in his defection. He came and made his compliment. "Sire," said he, "I know a treasure meant for your high majesty. I will show the spot where it lies hid." The monkey went at Reynard's bid, and was caught in a trap. The fox exclaimed, "How do you think to govern us, when after all, with all your fuss, you cannot well, do what you may, keeping yourself out of harm's way?" The animals agreed, "That royal power suits very few indeed." Illustration 264. Illustration 265. The horse and the ass. An ass accompanied by a horse uncourteous, who only had his harness on his back, and the poor jackass staggered. Neath the load of vegetable and a pack, he begged the horse to help him, if he could, but not a single bit the other would. "I ask," said the poor beast, "a little pity, help me at least to reach the city." The horse refused, and got his due, for the ass died, the farmer's man. Stripped off the skin of honest Ben, and made the horse whom they espied drag on the skin and the cart beside. Moral: 'tis wise to lend our aid to others in distress. We often thus are made the means of happiness. The churlish, unkind man his neighbor's death may cause, and have to help his family through taxes and the laws. Illustration 267. The astrologer who fell into a well. An astrologer of high ambition, while stargazing, fell down into a well. Sage gentleman: remark the people of the town, how did you think to read the stars, old man, when you cannot preserve your own position? This adventure in itself, without going further, might serve as a lesson to most of mankind, for of us mortals a certain part inclines to the belief that with the help of mind, the book of destiny may easily be read, But this book, by Homer and his disciples sung, what is it called but chance, by ancients, and by us Christians named providence instead? Now in chance there can no science be, or why should it be called by them chance? And things uncert, who knows in advance, if all depends upon the fixed decree of him who does all things and nothing does unwisely? How should we read his will, and know that which from us he would conceal? Wherefore watch the stars so nicely, to know how to avoid inevitable woe, or how, in future times, our fate will go to make us, in the midst of pleasure, sad, or with predicted evil, drive us mad. Convert all blessings into curses dire? Is this the knowledge to which we aspire? Is it an error or a crime thus to believe that future destiny can thus be known in place of stargazing above our head? Let us confide ourselves to the Great One. The firmament exists, the stars go on their way, and the sun shines upon us every day, and every day the day is lost in night, without our knowing aught else from the sight, that the seasons come, the crops are ripe, and in what wood we should look out for snipe. And some few other things, but for the change of day to night by which the world doth range, it has not aught to do with destiny. Quacks and ye compilers of horoscopes, quit all the courts of princes in Europe, and take with you all mischief makers. You deserve belief no more than they do moral. This astrologer in the well resembles all of his false art, who while they are in danger dream that in the stars they read the happiest theme. Illustration 271. The animals sick with the plague, a scourge, which spread terror, invented by heaven to punish earth. The plague, if to name it be no error, was making every animal to curse his birth. In one day it might have enriched Acheron, and upon beasts made busy war, amongst them all there was not one. But sick and ailing was complaining sore, all did not die, but each was ill. Not one strove now to eat his fill, no meat excited them to taste, nor did the wolves again lay waste the innocent prey. Even the doves fled from each other, and cooed no more the livelong day. The lion held war council. My brother, said he, addressing each in turn, I think that heaven hath allowed this punishment on us to fall, for the sins we have disavowed. Now I for one will confess all, and let him who is most to blame be slaughtered in the other's name. Perhaps he may obtain a common cure, for history tells us that in like cases, the guilty die in others' places. Let us not then be false to nature. Let us confess our faults in fine. I will the first acknowledge mine, and I avow that oft I keep a serious tax on harmless sheep. What had they done in not offended? Yet either quiet lives have ended, sometimes with sorrow be it heard, I e'en have eaten the shepherd, and I acknowledge all, and I will die like a quiet bird. If my death keep you from your fall, it must be hoped now in all justice that he who is most guilty perish. Sire, said the fox, you are too good a king to die for any trivial thing. Your simples are too nice. Eat sheep, and why not? Is it a sin? Is it a vice? No, sire, you did them honor, and as for shepherds, I desire that over us their false empire should cease, and we have all we want of sheep and fleece. So said the fox, flatterers applaud, the tiger, bear, and other powers they laud, even for their most violent offense. All quarrelsome people, down to the mastiffs, were little saints. But when the donkey's turn came on, they heard him with many ifs. He said, I now remember that by a monk's garden passing, it was late in December, and my strength soon faints, I ate a leaf of some dry plant, and e'en now I with terror pant. They seized upon him and devoured, and said he was the cause of heaven's anger being lowered with interested judges. Right is always on the side of might. Illustration 275, the candle. It was in the home of the Olympian gods that bees first lodged, T said, on Mount Hymettus, and thitherwards came zephyrs with light tread, when from the hives the honey had all been taken out, as there remained naught but wax. Some candles were, for money, carefully made and sold in packs. One of these candles on a certain day, seeing that clay by fire was turned to brick, thought he could harden his body the same, and getting near the fire to try the trick. This new Empedocles to flame condemned, soon found of his philosophy the end. Illustration 276. Illustration 277. The hog, the goat, and the sheep, a goat. A sheep and a fat hog, on the same cart were bound for the fair. They lay as quietly as any log, but were not seeking their amusement there. They were to be sold, so says the story. The carter, who his business knows, don't take them into town to see the shows. Dame Porker was inclined to squeal, as though the butcher's knife she gan to feel. Her grunts and squeals and cries were loud enough to deafen one. The other animals, more wise and better tempered, with surprise exclaimed, have done? The carter to the porker turned. Where have you manners learned? Why stun us all? Do you not see that you're the noisiest of the three? That sheep says not a word, nor can the young goat's voice be heard. But, said the hog, they both are fools. If like me they knew their fate, they'd halloo out at greater rate. The goat will only lose her milk, the sheep his wool, but here, poor me, to be eaten and know my destiny. The porker was quite right. But hallowing with all her might was all too late and could not alter her sad fate. Illustration 279. Illustration 280. The delicate heron by the bank of a river, a heron walked out, and in it were sporting pike, mackerel, and trout. Now these fish with great ease our bird might have caught, but I'll wait till I'm hungry, the silly bird thought. At last came his appetite. Now I'll eat, the bird cries, and some tench from the bottom, just then he saw rise. But these are not good enough, at this time of day. And he waited for better, till all swam away, at eve almost starved. When all other means fail, he was right glad to sup on a poor little snail. Illustration 281. Illustration 282. The blackamoor and her mistress, a foolish young lady, took one of her maids, who chanced to be black as the ace of spades, and said she'd have her washed white. By the other maids she was put in a tub, and with water and towels. Her skin they did rub, through a long summer day till the night, but the more they did rub her, the blacker she got, and while they did scrub her, she mourned her hard lot. So the maids threw away all their labor and care, and the mistress gave up her fine scheme in despair. Illustration 283. Illustration 284. The bear and the gardener. A bear and gardener, who mutually tired of solitary life and were inspired with a warm friendship for each other, promised to be to one another excellent friends, and so they were. As for the death of the poor man, I'll tell you how it happened, if I can. The bear, watching the gardener in his sleep, beholding on his head a fly, and thinking it bad company, took up a stone and dropped it down upon the fly, 'tis true, but broke the gardener's crown. Moral: to make our fortunes or to mend, a most malignant enemy is better than a foolish friend. Illustration 285. Illustration 286. The VULTURES and the PIGONS, the winged inhabitants of air, waged on a time a direful war. Not those in budding groves who sing to usher in the amorous spring, nor those with Venus car who fly through the light clouds in yielding sky, but the rapacious vulture brood with crooked beak that thirsts for blood and iron fangs. Their war, Tease said, for a dog's carrion course was made. Shrill shrieks resound from shore to shore. The earth beneath is sanguined o'er, versed in the science to destroy. Address and valor they employ. 'Twould take 100 tongues to tell the heroes from the air who fell. The dovecote race, a gentle nation, made offers of their mediation. Prudent ambassadors are sent, the vultures with the terms content agree their guarantee to take, an armistice and treaty make. This kind desire to interfere cost the poor peacemakers full dear, to wrap and bread the ruthless crew, nor gratitude nor faith who knew, on the defenseless pigeons fall, and shortly had devoured them all. Moral: when tyrants from their quarrels cease, some weaker neighbor pays their peace. His safety in their warfare lies, their feuds not he should compromise. When Joseph, Frederick, and Kate, tired of unprofitable hate, their animosities would heal, they swallowed Poland at a meal. Illustration 288. Illustration 289. The bear and the bees. A bear once rambled from his home, chanced through a garden trim to roam, where, neath the shelter of the trees, the farmer had his hives of bees. Bruin loved honey. "Now," said he, "I'll rob your storehouse, Master Bee. You'll buzz and hum about my ears, but noise a brave bear never fears." So saying, bear orderns a hive, and straight the air is all alive with angry enemies who sting as well as buzz, and make bear sing a lively tune of growls and roars, and cover him with smarting sores. Illustration 290. Illustration 293. A catalogue of entertaining and instructive, juvenile books, published and for sale by C. G. Henderson & Co. at Their Central Book and Stationery Warehouse, No. 164 Chestnut Street, corner of 7th, under Barnum's Museum, Philadelphia. Illustration 294. Maja's Alphabet, a very beautiful pictorial alphabet, in rhyme with new and original DESIGNS, by ABSOLON. Illustration 295. Costumes of America. An excellent volume for young people of both sexes, and well calculated to awaken an interest in the history of this continent. Illustrated with 24 engravings of original costumes. One volume, square 16 mo. Cloth, 50 cents. With colored plates, 75 cents. Illustration 296. Little Charlie's Christmas Amusements, or Winter Sports during the Holidays, with 28 engravings on wood. One volume, square 16 mo. Cloth binding. Price 25 cents. Illustration 297. Little Charlie's Stories of Great Men, descriptive of heroes, statesmen, and scholars, written in an easy style for B. Janineers. One volume, square 16 mo. Cloth. 25 cents. Illustration 298. Carlo Afarancio and I, An Italian Story, and Other Stories for Young People. Beautifully illustrated with engravings from original designs, square 16 mo. Cloth binding, this is a very touching and entertaining story for youth. The scene is laid in England, and in Italy the incidents are of a peculiarly interesting character. Illustration 299, Little Charlie's Games and Sports, embellished with 27 engravings of the primary, games for little children, 1 volume square 16 mo. Cloth, 25 cents, illustration 300, Good Aunt Fanny's Budget, of Stories and Legends for Children. Translated from the German, by Charles A. Dana, illustrated with 40 spirited engravings after designs by Richter, 1 vol. Quarto, cloth binding. Price 75 cents, illustration 301, Little Charlie's Picture Alphabet, A stands for an army, how bravely they go, with flag, drum, and trumpet, they make a great show, 1 volume 16 mo. Cloth, price 25 cents, illustration 302, Little Charlie's Country Walk, or Summer Rambles, in THE. Fields and Woods, by Little Charlie, an amusing and instructive book for children from 6 to 8 years of age, illustrated with 20 engravings, 16 mo. Cloth binding, price 25 cents, illustration 304, Little Charlie's Rhymes and Jingles, a new collection of stories in rhyme, for all the good little boys of America, embellished with 20 appropriate wood designs, square 16 mo. Cloth, 25 cents, illustration 304. Kris Kringle's Rhyme Book, a lively book of rhymes for very little children, richly embellished with pictures, square 16 mo, paper covers, 12.5 cents, cloth binding, 25. Illustration 305, Nutcracker and Sugar Dolly, A Fairy Tale, translated from the German, by Charles A. Dana, square 16 mo. Cloth and cloth gilt. This new fairy tale is one of the liveliest, most readable, and most unexceptionable for children which has ever appeared. Illustration 306, The Complete Book of Nursery Rhymes, From the Creation of the World to the Present Time, 1 volume 18 mo, 252 pages. Cloth binding, illustration 307, Thrilling Stories of THE Ocean, for the entertainment and instruction of the young. This is a neat volume of 300 pages with numerous embellishments. It is written in a familiar, popular style and is well suited to the juvenile family or school library. Cloth binding, plain and gilt extra, illustration 308, Costumes of Europe, beautifully embellished with 24 engravings of original costumes. 1 vol, square 16 mo. Fine cloth binding, 50 CTS, with called engravings, 75 CTS. This is a companion volume to the Costumes of America and is equally instructive as well as pleasing for young readers. Pointer. Every intelligent boy should possess a copy of the Book of Costumes of Europe and America. End of the project GUTMBRGEBOOKESOP, in rhyme. Old friends in a new dress asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg Electronic Work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property. Trademark Copyright Agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg Electronic Works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg Electronic Work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1E1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to a work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7, or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted, with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg, license terms from this work, or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1. E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the project. Gutenberg license. 1. E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense, to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to, viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9. 1. E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1. E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in Section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as but not limited to incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1. F2. Limited warranty, disclaimer of DAMAGES, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the Foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1. F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you received the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you received the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1. F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1 F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1. F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1. F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone, providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work; b, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work; and c, any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the State of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or federal tax identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair, NJ 7042, USA, +1 862-621-9288. Email contact links and up to date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact. Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.